Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is April 22nd, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our access code is 449389#. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, chapter 15. I believe we read from 1 to 17. So we're going to pick up there. Let me see. Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 18 through 27. If the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had come and spoken unto them, they had not had sin, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me hated my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin, but now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without cause. But when the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from the Father, even the Spirit of truth, which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me. And ye also shall bear witness, because ye have been with him from the beginning. Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 18 to 27.
Okay, all right. Tonight we have a short subject tonight. I don't know if Jan got the information. Did you get the information out early enough for our topic,
Jan? I didn't get your topic until after the newsletter went out.
All right, well, anyway, we're going to be looking at natural law versus civil law. This is kind of a short paper. Again, it's a memorandum of law. I think we have about 20, I don't know, three or four memorandums done, and it's been uploaded already. This is one of them, civil versus natural law, or rights, I think it is. And I think I mentioned this last week. We're probably going to have about 25 or 30 memorandums, but who knows, maybe even more. We may have some other subject matters that we want to do a memorandum on. And, of course, this is one of the key points we need to make in our case. All of these memorandums will be filed in our case against the United States Supreme Court. Now, I know we've been speaking about this for months now, talking about suing the judiciary. I'm not sure whether I made this clear a couple of weeks ago. We've come to realize that we really have to sue the United States Supreme Court because they're the responsible one for the actions of the federal district courts. And we'll cover that position very clearly in the paper. But anyway, right now that's where it's looking. We'll be focusing in on the United States Supreme Court on this when we get to write the paper. And again, the paper is being written as we continue to, you know, put things together. I also, today I started to work back on the course and the book, and I've been working on the Constitution. And I think if I can stay on point for a week or so, maybe not do any more memorandums for a week, I probably could get through the Constitution and get everything done, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the other amendments. I think there's 27 altogether, so 11 through 27 amendments. And we've already done an introduction to the founding documents, which is quite long, but it's pretty much needed, I think. And a lot of the other stuff afterwards, after that chapter, a lot of it is already kind of framed out and worked. Just got to work it together and make things flow and get in some proper order. So anyway, for those who have reached that point where they can't go any further on the course, I think we've done up to Chapter 6. I'm not sure. Jan, do you know, or Gerard, do you know how far we are on that course? Are we on Chapter 6, I think?
The last I checked, it was 6, yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay. Yeah, 7 will be going up, and 7 is going to be quite large. It's going to be 7, 7A, 7B, 7C, and maybe 7D, I guess. I'm not sure. There's going to be a chapter or sub-chapter under 7, one for the introduction to the founding documents, which is quite long, and then the Declaration of Independence, and then after that the Constitution itself, which we probably, the way I'm looking at it, is really pulling in the 27, 11 through 27 amendments, tying them right into the Constitution as we go along with that. Looking at the Constitution, so we can see as we go along what changes have been made in the Constitution by some of those bills. And then, of course, the Bill of Rights. And again, I'm not sure, I'll probably do the Bill of Rights after the Constitution, but I may end up doing it alongside the Constitution. I'm not sure yet. We haven't worked that part out yet. All right. Anyway, tonight we're going to be focusing in on natural law versus civil law. If anybody would like to follow along, you can go up to the website, on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, click on the highlight grand jury, and click on action against the judiciary. And it looks like it's the first one on the page, civil versus natural rights. So that's what we'll be looking at. Like I said, it's quite short. And then we'll go forward from there. Let me see if I can navigate my way back here to this page. All right. The purpose of this memorandum is to clearly state the difference between civil rights and natural rights. Civil rights are those that are granted by legislators, whereas natural rights are unalienable, which grow out of the nature of man. In other words, received via a blessings from nature's God. Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of a common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts, admiralty courts, proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Inferior court. Equity courts, also known as civil law courts, or criminal courts that proceed according to statutory law and are not courts of record. Their jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court where rights are defined by statutes called civil rights. Superior court. In law courts, also known as natural law courts, common law courts, or courts of record, that proceed according to the course of the common law, it is distinguished from proceeding in equity, whereas in law courts are a natural right given by God at law, according to law, by and or in law, particularly in distinction from that which is done in or according to equity, or in titles such as sergeant at law, barrister at law, attorney or counselor at law. Court of record. A judicial tribunal having the attributes and exercising functions independently of the person or the magistrate designed generally to hold it. A proceeding according to the course of the common law. Jones versus Jones. The decision of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly, rather than resorting to appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed and are binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of the United States Supreme Court would be. It is as conclusive on the United States Supreme Court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Ex parte Watkins, 3 Peter. Courts of record and courts not of record. The former being those whose acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony, and which have the power to fine or imprison for contempt, and they generally possess a seal. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity, which have no power to fine or imprison, and in which the proceedings are not enrolled or recorded. The only inherent difference ordinarily recognized between superior and inferior court is that there is a presumption in favor of validity of the judgments of the former, none in favor of those of the latter, and that a superior court may be shown not to have had power to render a particular judgment by reference to its record. Note, however, that a superior court is the name of a particular court, but when a court acts by virtue of a special statute conferring jurisdiction in a certain class of cases, it is a court of inferior or limited jurisdiction for the time being, no matter what its ordinary status may be. In conclusion, equity courts are not courts of record and are driven by statute, human law, civil, presided over by a judge, political, have no power to fine or imprison, whose decisions can be appealed, and rights are legislated and defined by code or statute. This court has no jurisdiction over the people without their consent. Law courts are courts of record and are driven by natural law, no statutes, presided over by a jury of the people, who have the power to fine or imprison for contempt, whose decisions are final and cannot be appealed, and rights are given by God called natural rights. This court has jurisdiction over the people. Sealed and signed by the grand jury foreman. Okay, that was a pretty short paper, and you know, I think the paper that I posted up is an older version of what we had written. I think we made some changes and corrections, so, but it's very, very close. When I get a chance, I will upload the right paper, and we'll go from there. Let's see. I guess tonight we'll go first to see if we have any announcements and any questions, and then we'll take it there to Brent. But go ahead, Jan, do we have anything?
Yes, we have three or four questions for you.
Before we do that, do we have any announcements or anything?
We do have one courtroom observer request out for California that's listed in the newsletter, and it should have gone out to the state by now for, I think it's Wednesday.
Okay.
Of this week. That's the only announcement that I saw.
All right, we'll go right to the questions then.
Now, I assume this person's having an IRS issue. The question is, would you advise using information in the memorandums to be used in an affidavit and then sent to the IRS or Treasury Department?
Well, you know, I don't know where what state of being they are in their case with the IRS. I don't know if they're just pushing them for information, sending papers out, and haven't taken them to court yet, or if they've taken them to court. And there's a difference on how you would respond. Whenever the IRS sends you anything, you must answer. You must answer. And you must answer with certified letters. And you might at some point want to do pretty quickly, actually, but first you want to communicate with them concerning the issues that they're, you know, bringing up. You definitely have to respond. And at some point you have to do a notice and demand. Now, they will ignore your notice and demand, but you know you're preparing yourself for a potential default with them if and when they take you to court. I also would try to get ahead of them and sue them before they get a chance to sue you. That brings you into at least the federal district courts as it's recorded under. Oh, goodness, is that U.S.? Let me think about this. It's U.S.C. 26. We know that's the law court. So I guess it would be under U.S.C. 28. You know, the Constitution clearly says that there'd be a federal district and the court would be a court of record. Ultimately, it talks about courts of law, but the code that Congress lawfully wrote makes it a court of record. But that court of record or that court of law is the same place where equity courts are held. But generally speaking, when a person walks into that court to file a paper, they should be going into a court of record. They should be filing, unless they request, an equity court. But if you're pursuing a case, and I would think anytime you go up against the government, you definitely want to do a jury, so that makes it a court of record. So you're filing a court of record, which would be opening up a natural law court. The problem is, of course, is that they have concealed that court. You can't find it. They only have courts of equity. They have what appears to be what they call civil courts that they claim is the place where you can go and you can get your jury trial and everything else there. It's kind of a quasi-court. It's combining, really, statutes and common law together. And the statutes rule. The ruling of those courts operate under USC 28, the rules of the court, Rule 12 particularly. And they will do, if you got a good strong case, they'll want to maintain the status quo. They'll do everything they can to throw you out. They'll probably throw you out under Rule 12. But anyway, continuing on that line of thinking here, let's say you end up with they're bringing you into court. Now, they're bringing you into what they're calling an Article 1 court. No such animal, no such thing. Constitution doesn't give any power or authority, doesn't even put any kind of an idea out that'd be something called an Article 1 court. We refer to the courts, the federal courts, as Article 3 courts because that's where we find the power and the authority and the jurisdiction of the federal courts. So, and again, it should be a court of law. When you pursue this in a fashion, you're going in trying to get into a court of law. But when they come out after you, they're taking you into an Article 1 court. Now, if you read USC 26, not all of it, there's so much to read in any of these things, but, you know, very carefully if you look into some of these things, you'll discover they'll call it a court of record, and yet it runs by statute. It runs by USC Code Title 26. That's an equity court. They'll give you a jury if you want, but it's a statutory jury. It's a control jury. It's a stack jury, no doubt about it. I would do, if I was pulled into that court, first thing I would do is challenge the jurisdiction because they don't have jurisdiction over you. And so I would move it into the federal court, even though it appears as if you are in a federal court. You then would have to be in a different, with a different judge. Now, I was down in let's see, the Southern District up in Westchester, so it's north of New York City. I went down there one time on behalf of a friend who went into the tax court, you know, who was battling the IRS. And when I went into the building, you know, I was looking for the proper courtroom, and they said, oh, you're looking for the tax court. And they sent me up a flight of stairs and down a corridor and to the end, and it was the tax court. So I presume they have a particular room or a place that's just the tax court. At least that's what it appears. I mean, the building's quite big. They got a lot of different rooms, so they got a lot of different courtrooms available there. But that's what it appears to be. And but the bottom line, okay, nevertheless, you'd want to find yourself with a different judge when you challenge, because, again, you're looking at an individual or dealing with an individual, that being the judge, that is going to rule under USC 26. You're challenging that jurisdiction that you're not held under that, and you would want to be a different judge. If it's the same judge, then there's a problem going there, and I would object. I would object to the room, too, that you're in if that room that you went to is only for tax courts. You'd have to find that out. But anyway, that challenge hopefully could get you out because they don't have the jurisdiction. When you challenge a jurisdiction, they're required to put the jurisdiction on the paperwork, which they don't. And the problem with USC 26 is that there is no jurisdiction. It doesn't lay out any jurisdiction whatsoever. It also, very interesting, the actual year and day that they referred to, I think it's U.S. 26 that they did this with, they said that it was positive law, so it was enacted into law, and then the very same day they discarded that. And it's only noted in there by note, so you have to read through those sections. In your conversations with the IRS, when they, you know, try to come out after you for whatever things, you'll notice that they'll give you some codes, and you need to look up the codes. And on the surface, it will look like you're going to have to respond and answer, and that you're held under these things. And you definitely got to respond and answer, but it'll look like you're held under these things. But when you start to look at the meanings of some of the things in whatever it is that they're holding, for instance, if they were trying to go into your bank accounts, they'll use certain U.S. codes that they use to apply that, and you'll be under USC 26. And when you start looking down that road, you'll find out it has nothing to do with people. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do ultimately with commercial business, and it has to do usually with farms and something to do with gasoline. It's very confusing. But, you know, if you carefully go through this to discover the meanings of the words in the particular code that they're applying against you, you can respond and let them know that you don't fit into this criteria. This is not you, that they have no jurisdiction over you. Now, I wouldn't argue that jurisdiction with them in paper, but I definitely would argue that jurisdiction on paper if you're pulled into court. So, again, it depends on where you're at and what you're doing. But never, ever, ever, ever get anything from the IRS or anything that appears destructive to you in your life from the government. Never not respond. You must always respond, okay, because then you'll default. They'll hold you liable for defaulting. Also, you have to move quickly in your challenges, because if you don't do your challenge quick enough, they've got things written up there. If you don't do this in 15 days or so, it's assumed, and you can't get out of the jurisdiction. Of course, even that is unconstitutional. It's unlawful. But they do it, and they pull the wool over the people's eyes as often as possible, arguing the point that, again, you'd have to move into a federal court under the natural law in order to try to get out of this kind of a problem. But that's where I would go if I had to go back into the court system. I would make the challenge on the fact that they don't have jurisdiction. All right, anything else? Jen?
The second question is, what have or does NLA plan to do in getting their educational courses into the schools?
Well, first we have to finish writing them. The book that we're writing, we're going to turn that into a textbook at some point afterwards. It should be rather easy to be able to do that because, you know, it's almost a textbook the way it's being written anyway, and a reference book. So that would be the first thing we'd have to do, again, is get it into a textbook. But I think before we move into an education, you know, and trying to fight locally to get, you know, these courses into, you know, grammar school and high school, you know, the first thing we have to do, and we're putting all our energies towards, is getting the education out to the people to prepare them for taking back the consent of government that we've been stolen. It's been stolen from us. We don't have consent of government. The government controls itself. They do what they want. We need to take that back. And that, of course, is what our court case is going to be all about. And again, it's going to be very unique the way we're writing and putting this course to court case together and how we're approaching this. But anyway, the first order of business really is taking back the federal courts. Once we can take back the federal courts, where the people are the authority in the natural law courts, being the jury and the grand jury, which is, you know, chosen from within the counties, but we need to take back the administration of those juries. Clearly, they are not capable or trustworthy enough, ultimately, to be able to control the juries, whether it be a trial jury and even the grand jury. You know, to leave a grand jury alone with a prosecutor, I think, is a very dangerous thing. They should never be left alone when there's a prosecutor talking to the grand jury. You know, the only way they get indictments and different things these days out is when a prosecutor brings it to the grand jury. We don't hear or see, and the sheriffs don't even know that they could do it, but we hear or see no sheriffs going to the grand jury to discuss a case looking for an indictment. They have been trained, the sheriffs have been trained to go to the prosecutor, and he'll handle it. We've had this experience here in New York where we tried to get the sheriff to go after some judges, and eventually we kind of convinced them that we had a good position here, and they, you know, then we were told, it was by his first lieutenant, if I remember, we were told that, you know, he couldn't really do anything unless we can get the prosecutor. We have to convince the prosecutor. So we went to talk to the prosecutor, and that was like talking to the wall, and of course that wasn't going anywhere because we were going after judges, and that's taboo. They'll never allow that happen, unless they want to get rid of those judges, maybe. But clearly they didn't want to do that, so we couldn't get anywhere. So you don't see a coroner pulling forward a grand jury, which they should be doing if they feel that there's murder or something of that nature. I would imagine that they should be the ones to go before the grand jury to convince them of a wrongdoing, a murder. Sheriffs should be going, okay, and prosecutors too. You know, there's been written some statutes on behalf of the prosecutors, and so that they have a, you know, sort of a policy, procedures, regulations, whatever words you want to use. Regulations is probably a good one, codes, regulations, to be able to, for procedure of calling a jury and so on. But again, I wouldn't want to see them left alone. Now, rarely do you see the juries where the juries have access, where the people have access to the jury. Again, an alarming situation when the people can't even go to talk to the jury, to the grand jury. You'll always get some filtering system in between you and the grand jury, preventing you from seeing the grand jury. Want to know what you want to bring to them? They'll bring it if they think it's a case. You know, they just don't want the people talking to the grand jury, it seems. We've seen them go so extreme to have people arrested for stalking the grand jury because they're trying to get in to see the grand jury and being prevented. But we know of one case where an individual was trying for over a year, maybe 2 years, I don't remember how long, it was a long time, and eventually they went after this guy for stalking the grand jury. I think he got 2 years for that. I don't remember exactly what it was he got. So anyway, I forget the question. I wanted to bring it around some. What was the question, Jen?
What do we plan to do to get our educational courses into the schools?
Okay, wow, I went all the way around a long way. But anyway, the point is we have to first get into the federal courts. And once we get into the federal courts, then, you know, we should have no problem. And the key point is really what we're talking about, being able to take control of the jury from the, as administrators. But once we get into the federal courts, getting into the state's courts for the same positionings would be a slam dunk, because now it becomes a constitutional issue and the federal court is already agreeing with us, and they're going to agree that, you know, we the people should be in charge of the administration. Of course, that'll be our battle, but it'll be a much easier battle to win instead of trying to win county by county or state by state. Again, federal government, and then we shouldn't have a problem in the states. But once that's accomplished, okay, we still have the political, control we have to take back. We have to work with the committeemen. And then once we take the committeemen process back, giving it back to the people on a local level, so they control the political side and then they control the judicial side, now they can work together in the election districts. Because remember, the committeemen are in every single election district in America. And so it'll be very easy to get a message out to the people concerning an education with, on the Constitution, on consent of government. And then, of course, at that point, working on the grassroots level and dealing with the education, we would then start making our battle in the schools to get a proper education for the children. That would cover the common law, cover how the court system works, and cover what the difference between equity courts and law courts are, and of course proper understanding not only of the procedures but also of American history, a lot of things that people just don't know. Very few, again, when you hear a United States Supreme Court judge talk, and I heard this not long ago, I forget which judge it was, but when they're talking and they refer to us as a democracy, that's pretty sad. When a United States Supreme Court justice, one of the nine, calls our government a democracy, that's frightening. But that's how bad and how ignorant we the people are. We're as ignorant as he is. We call it a democracy. I don't anymore, because I've come to learn that. And I'd imagine most of the people here with us today, they've learned that. But a lot of people out there, newscasters, and so on. You know, recently I heard Sean Hannity talking, and he made the correction. He says, by the way, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. So he must be getting something from somebody. So I was kind of surprised to hear that he understood that. I don't know how much he understands, but kind of surprised. So it's going to be a little while before we can get to that point, because, again, we have to organize. A small group of people can't do this. We need a lot more help, and we need to really get the critical mass going so that we can get that help. But we got a lot of members. We should be able to get a lot of help here for the membership we have. And because in order to get things into the school, it's a battle and it's a grassroots battle. And we have to be on the ground in all 3,143 counties. Now, we are in most of the counties, we are in every state of the union, and we're in probably at least, goodness, two-thirds, three-quarters of the counties across America. But we also have to be active. The people in these counties have to be active enough to want to get out there and do the work to fight to get a proper education for our children in school. We will not be, nor will we be now or in the future ever truly what America is meant to be if we cannot train our children on the way that they should go and how to understand, our American history, understand common law, understand the difference between law and equity, and understand how the court system works. We have to know it, and to take control of the political process without the politics. So we have a lot more work to do before we can start getting moving things into the schools. But we will get a textbook out pretty quickly after the book is done. And maybe people can take it to their local schools, especially private schools, and see if they can push it as a curriculum. But that's something we're not making any plans on until we get to that point. We'll see what happens when we get that done. Jan?
Yes, the next question is about the sheriff's handbooks. Why are you not emailing all of the sheriff's handbooks to all of the sheriffs in PDF form and suggesting that they distribute a copy to all of the deputies? You can set it up and see when the email was opened, and this will cut the cost of printing, packaging, and mailing tremendously.
Yeah, we did that, and they didn't do what we asked them to do. Again, you know, when they start to see things like this, someone either gets in front of it, shuts it down, or next thing you know, the sheriff's talking to a lawyer, say, oh, these people are crazy, that's not this, that, or the other thing, or whatever. But we've already done that. We've communicated. We had faxes going. We had, eight or ten faxes. I have to get up there and count them. You know, we have connected to the computer, our computer. We went out and we had one computer running 24/7, running eight faxes, and we were faxing every sheriff in America. We faxed a lot of elected individuals. We faxed every court in America, the federal courts, the state courts. Goodness, what other list did we have there, Jen? I mean, we were comprehensive in our lists. Both legislative on the state level and the federal level. So they've all been told. We've communicated with everyone in government, the United States Supreme Court, the administration, the judicial system, you know, when Jeff Sessions was in there. We've communicated again with every federal judge in America, all the state judges, and all 50 governors and legislators of the states, and we were trying to educate them. We were trying to alert them to the subversion from within, and it all went ignored. And that was all part of the process. I mean, we were hoping we'd get some people to respond to it, but we got nobody responding to it. Nobody. That's pretty frightening. When you get all these people who should know the law and they can't recognize it. Not one of them can recognize the law. They think that we're crazy because, of course, some bar attorney who doesn't know the law either in most cases, and clearly they don't know the common law, and that's what they chalk us off as being. So, again, we've done all that. And we've also mailed hardcore mailing, one hardcore mailing, with a CD, I think, if I recall. Matter of fact, it was. We sent a CD out. CD or DVD? Let me think. I guess it's a DVD. It's called... no, it's not a DVD. What do they call not the CD, but the larger one. What do they call that, Jan? Do you remember, anybody? The one with the large...
Well, the big ones are DVDs. Little ones are CDs. Yeah.
Okay, DVDs. Then we use the DVDs. We bought a press. I don't know what you would call it, really. It's a CD copier is what it is, or a CD-DVD copier. And we were able to copy, I think, 12 at a time. And we pumped out 3,140 whatever DVDs. We created a letter, we mailed to every single sheriff in America a copy on DVD. It went nowhere. And again, we've also we filed over 20 papers in the court. We've focused in on the United States Supreme Court. They didn't respond. To the federal judiciary, all 94 federal districts, they didn't respond. The Justice Department, they didn't respond. Nobody responded. But we filed it in the courts. We also filed the papers with this administration and filed the papers with the Justice Department, and as I said, we had a number. As a matter of fact, that number is still available. We're still filing papers under that number, even though the judge claims to have closed it down, and we did indict that judge, and that indictment was filed in that case also, and we've notified the clerks of the indictment, and that anybody who, you know, conceals or destroys or removes, prevents, you know, any papers to be filed here, that we would indict them. We'd bring them up for indictment. And they've been taking our papers. They're still filing. So we did file papers recently, maybe about a month or so ago was the last ones we filed. But anyway, we got 20 papers filed. And the United States Supreme Court has been copied on all of those 20 papers, and they've done nothing. We've reported subversion, which is what the law requires, and they've done nothing. We laid out a lot of the problems, and they've done nothing. So, again, not totally unexpected. You know, I know some people who know what they're aware of what we're doing here. They're not involved, but they're aware, and they think we're not going to succeed, and they don't understand the success that we've already have. Their lack of answer, believe it or not, is part of our success because that's part of the court case. Totally ignoring the warnings, especially now with what's going on in Washington, with the deep state now really at a point where exposure is really going to come high, at a high level. And we're hoping that we can have our paperwork and the timing of that to be for the filing at the right time will happen, hopefully. And we're going to bring all of this information together in one case against the United States Supreme Court, lay it at their feet. And that's when we're going to need everyone to get behind us. And that's why right now, this is the most important time, and I'm trying to get this message out to everybody, and this is the most important time right now. This is the time to be educated. This is the time try to expand National Liberty Alliance by getting us, you know, look, if people listen to radio stations, they know the right radio stations that we should be getting on to where we could be talking to some patriots. People listen to a lot of YouTube programming and various other places where, you know, they should be contacting them, telling them about National Liberty Alliance and trying to connect us with, you know, the radio person or whatever that we could be interviewed on. You know, get a hold of Jan if you make a connection, and Jan will make the final connection to try to book us on those stations. We need to get the word out. This is the time. So everybody should be working to do that. And everybody needs to be ready to really, you know, sort of press up against the door when the time comes with their shoulders, so to speak, you know, figuratively speaking, when we file these papers. We need everybody working on this. And but look, at the other side of this thing, and the most important part, which I brought up at first just a few minutes ago, was education. If the people are ignorant, you can't be administrators to the juries. If you don't understand natural law yourself, and you don't understand what equity law is, and the U.S. titles, and acknowledge the fact that they are valid, just that they're bringing us into the wrong jurisdictions. Ultimately, that is the case. If we're not getting the people, you know, educated, then who are we going to put in these positions? You know, we've got over 1,000 administrators, but we don't have 1,000 administrators in the course. And, you know, we need to be pushing towards those people who have committed to become administrators, kind of wake them up and let them know, you know, if you're not going to be educated, you can't take these positions. We'd be just as bad off going in there and just trying to operate in some way without knowledge. How can we do that? How can you fly a plane if you don't know how to fly it? So people need to become educated, but not just for that purpose. People need to be educated just because this is a part of life. You need to be able to control your destiny. And we do that by controlling our government and our judicial process, which is part of our government. If we need to be the watchdogs. We need to make sure that everyone is getting their due process. And only until the people take control will we know and be able to always get due process. Because if the people are there running the process and watching what's going on in these courts, we can demand to make sure due process is given and the people aren't railroaded the way they are railroaded today. Everywhere, people losing their homes, their liberty, their freedoms, going to jail, for taxes or whatever. But, you know, people have to be involved. All right, what else you got?
Hey, John. John, yeah. I want to say something. I want to take a minute and say something
right ahead
in regards to what you just said. I've been working on trying to get our word out there, you know, through different venues. I mean, right now I'm working with Terry and Ollie and a couple other people.
And by the way, I watched that video you put together. It was only about 8 or 9 minutes. It was a short one.
Yeah.
It's excellent. I really like that. I think that's a good idea, getting those things out.
We'd like to do them all.
I agree.
Memorandums that John wrote, what we are doing is we formed a little team, and we're reading them and introducing them to the people by giving a little, you know, a little teaser and explaining somewhat of what's going on, telling everybody, look at this, is you got to read the footnotes and this and that. And then, you know, when we end, it has the link to get the rest of the thing. You know, we put that whole memorandum, you know, and we just, I'm not going to do the whole memorandum in every one of them, but whatever points are really, because there's some really good points in those. They're very instructive. I think they're really the culmination of all the research that's been done by John and NLA, you know, all of us coming together and coming to the understanding of these things. Like that Title 18 one is very, very powerful. People don't know that stuff. So the other thing I've been doing is you take the memorandum and I copy it, but I don't just copy I copy the top couple of paragraphs or the top paragraph, and then I go someplace like X22 or Serial Brain. And especially if it happens to be a video that kind of correlates to what they're talking about, and I take that like Title 18, I'm going to do this with all of them, by the way, and I put it in the comment and I say, well, check this out if you think that's bad, and I put it down there, and then I go dot dot dot, and then I put the link to that memorandum, which will also bring us to our site too. So just to put the teaser, but if you're going to do what I'm talking about, if you're going to copy the top part of the memorandums and put them in, what you need to do is you need to edit it. You need to cut the spaces that John has in there out, like because he double spaces, because what happens is you'll get only a couple of words because they're counting all those spaces that are in there, and it's not a good teaser for people to click on it. So if you cut all those spaces out and you scrunch it together a little bit, you can actually get almost, you know, the top part of a paragraph, and that way there you'll catch people's interest and they'll click on read more. So you want enough showing when you copy and paste that there's enough information showing. So that's what I do. I go through and I edit, I squish it together, I cut the spaces out so that I can get at least the first couple of lines that will grab their attention. And I think if we run around and do this with all these videos, those people, not only are we getting the word out, but those guys that run that stuff, they look at the comments because I see they comment back to people. So they're reading it. So that they're going to read that and they're going to say, what is this NLA? What is it? Oh, they'll probably call us, you know, if they like it. And all the guys that I'm posted on, there's just, what's not to like, you know what I mean? So everybody could be doing this. It doesn't just have to be me and Terry and Robert. We all should be doing this. And like John says, you're looking at certain media, social media, grab the thing, copy it, paste it. This is, everybody's allowed to use everything that we write. So why aren't you? Just use it. That's what I'm doing. And I mean, go on to Cyril Brain's latest flick and look at my comment, the way I put it in there. It's on there right now. And click on it and see what shows, and then hit show more and read it, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So anyway, I don't want to go too long, but that's my one of the suggestions of what we can do. And we're going to continue making them little videos on all of those.
I'd like to add to that if I could.
Yeah.
You know, this is another way that you can kind of start covering a lot where you don't have to have interviews. You just start putting this up. We've got NLA News now, and so we're going to move this over. I was just waiting for an okay from you and Gerard that we can keep on building these, and we'll put them out at NLA News, and everybody will be able to see them on the NLA News YouTube channel. So that's all I wanted to add.
Gerard, are you working on that, right?
Yeah. I have to get back to Terry. I haven't talked to her since we did the last one, but yes, that's where we're going. Exactly what Terry said is, I believe, what we're going to do. So, and look at, we could use help, and everybody can get this stuff out. And especially once we get that on the NLA News, it'll be a place that you can go and grab the latest stuff and maybe the latest explanation that we do and throw it on these other sites that you're watching. Put it in their comment section. Put it all over the place. And I think it'll be very effective if we do that. I yield.
Okay. Thank you, Gerard. Any other questions, Jan?
Yes, I have one more, and it's for Brent, and I see Brent is here. I'll unmute him. The question is, if the county officers such as prosecutor, magistrate, and so forth are corrupt, can the sheriff call his own grand jury and petit juries due to the fact that he is the top law enforcement officer in the county?
Brent, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, that question was for you.
Yes, I heard it. Thanks. The sheriff, like the rest of us, and this is a fundamental first principle of our tradition. We can do anything we think we ought to do, as long as we're not committing a clear felony such as murder, rape, larceny. If you're in a court case and you think that something's wrong, you want to file a piece of paper saying you think something's wrong and move the court to do what you want them to do, you can do that. If you're the sheriff, you think a grand jury ought to be convened, you have not only can you have a duty to do that. Now, if some other power of government tries to slap you down, well, then you got to deal with it. One thing is true about our courts, and the principle applies throughout for everyone, regardless of whether they're office holders or not, is the right to petition the government and the right to act. We in our common law tradition do not wait for permission to do much anything. Not as a general principle. In all of the rest of the world, they're afraid to do much anything unless they have permission from the government, the powers that be. And that's what stifles creativity and productivity. And that's why we are who we are and have been who we are. Of course, as has been observed, we're rapidly becoming more bureaucratic-minded as a people, and we live in fear and we cower. Years ago, I read a study about, this is from the 60s, when people were getting really nutty, and the psychobabble crowd was trying to take over. They'd been trying since about 60 years before that, and had got into the courts a little bit, trying to take over, and they were doing studies of children. And they went by this school, somebody, some young psychological student, went by this school, this grade school, and had a chain-link fence around the play yard, and the children were all hanging on the chain link fence looking out. And this researcher of the psychology of humanity said how terrible caging children like animals. And so the push became to take the chain link fence down in the community so the children wouldn't have a complex and feel like they were animals. Well, to cut to the end of the story, the chain link fence came down. But when it came down, and this is what the psychobabble crowd was observing and wrote about, instead of the children hanging on the chain link fence, of course, it wasn't there anymore. When they went out to play, they'd all play in the middle of the playground and wouldn't venture out to the edge. And the reason was because they were institutionalized and they had learned to think like scared animals. And that's the way we're getting. And if the sheriff wants to impanel the grand jury, if there's not something in the law that's good law that says no, he needs to do that. And if he thinks that the feds are breaking in and doing things that are unlawful, he has a duty to arrest them. And if he thinks that some wino is doing something unlawful, he has a duty to arrest him. There is no respect of persons among law enforcement officers if they follow the law. They're to arrest deputies. They're to arrest people who aren't part of the police force. They're to impanel grand juries if they think there's a problem in the community. Of course, it depends upon somewhat, to some degree, the court cases that have been handed down in their jurisdiction. If they think there's a court case that says that can impanel a grand jury for this reason and not that, if the sovereign state legislature if the state legislature of the sovereign state, I should say, to put it more properly, has said that he has the power to impanel a grand jury, but if he does so, he must do it by the following procedure, and if that procedure is lawful, he should follow that procedure. But don't go around looking, waiting for somebody. I say this to sheriffs, and I say it to all of us. As Americans, don't wait for somebody to give you permission to do something as a general rule. There are exceptions. If you want to go make dynamite and use it, there might be a law in your state that says you got to have a permission, a little bit of permission to buy high explosives. That might be another matter. But as a general rule, all of the things being equal, if you're not doing something outside the policy of good law, and this applies to the sheriff, yes, he has the option of doing that, just as a prosecutor has the option of who he will prosecute in a county situation and who he will not prosecute. And that's his act of discretion. The mark of free men is they have discretion within the scope of, within the God-given scope of their authority. And the God-given scope of your authority are those fundamental rights that God has put directly on you without any intermediary power or institution or government or priesthood or anything. He's put it directly on you as an individual. And when he does that, for example, he gives you the right of free speech and the right, that means authority, the right of silence. That is the totality of the possible government you could have over that little soft thing inside of your head called your tongue. And you have discretion when to speak and not to speak. If you believe you should speak, you better be talking. If you believe God would have you to be quiet and the other fellow doesn't have a right, a scope of authority over the information you have in your conscience, in your mind, you need to keep your mouth shut. But that's your choice, and that's nobody else's choice. That's what the mark of freedom is. You have discretion. If the sheriff sees that there's a problem and somebody needs to do an investigation and there's no positive law that's lawful that says he does not have authority to do that, then he must do it if he believes in his heart of hearts that it should be done. That's his discretion. The sheriff has discretion to do a lot of things, and he should exercise it. That's the mark of free men. In his position, or whether it's your position, under the authority you've been given individually by your maker. Back to you. Back to
well, amen. Thank you.
John, somebody there.
Yep, thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Amen to that. Yeah, you know what? And we've given this advice to sheriffs already, and that is that, you know, if they feel that they can't get a case into a court because it's being blocked by a prosecutor. A prosecutor has no authority to be blocking a sheriff. I'd arrest the prosecutor trying to block me. You know, we've advised sheriffs, we'll go down to the court and inquire with the clerk, when's the next time the grand jury is going to meet? I'd like to talk with them and get his name on the list. Okay, or call your own grand jury. Go down to the court and tell the clerk, hey, I'm calling some people together. What room can I use? And bring your own people in. You know, make the phone calls, get the sheriffs, get their secretaries or whatever, make the phone calls and get people down there and pull a grand jury together. And literally, if I was the sheriff, and we've advised them, arrest anyone that gets in your way and put them into the case for obstruction of justice, you know. The sheriff's got to get some backbone. They got to get some power and authority. And the only way they're going to do that is knowledge. Knowledge is power. This is the key to the whole thing. And this is exactly what National Liberty Alliance is trying to get out to the people. You know, knowledge is power. If you don't have the knowledge, then you have no power in the courts. You have no power in your government. You have no power anywhere in as far as, you know, your relationship with your government, and which, of course, the judicial system is part of that government. So people need to step up and go forward and push it, and especially sheriffs. And so, all right, anything else, Jan?
Well, that was the last that I had, John. So you're free and clear.
All right. Gerard, are you ready to take control of the panel? Gerard, you there? Yep, I guess he walked away. All right, we're going to move over to Brent. Brent Winters is the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. And his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Brent, you're muted. There you go.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
Now we got
the comment. Thank you. The comments I make are mine, so don't try to attribute anything I say to the leaders and the principals of National Liberty Alliance. And if you don't like it, I'm the one that said it, not them. I'm enjoying myself this evening. I have a neighbor that loves to eat venison, and he likes to butcher venison. And his neighbors like to hunt, but they're too, for whatever reason, maybe lazy to butcher. And so he has no less than eight deer in his freezers that he wants to get rid of before hunting season when he gets more. And so it's all ground venison, and he knows how to season it, and I get to eat all I want for the indefinite future. And I'm feasting this evening. I've never felt better. And if you haven't eaten ground venison, you've got to try it. And nothing sets better with you, and nothing invigorates a fellow more. Well, we're talking about, we've been talking about the Constitution of the United States, and going through it clause by clause and blow by blow, but I got a request from one of the fellows there at National Liberty Alliance that tries to help out, and he said, you, a long time ago, Brent, talked about common law outlawry. Outlawry at common law. And he says, I can't find it back in the archives. I'm sure it's there somewhere, but it's hard to dig all that stuff out. There's probably a few hundred by now. So he said, would you talk about it again? And I said, yes, I will. And it bears repeating. So I'm going to talk about a common law doctrine of law enforcement called outlawry. And I want to begin by quoting arguably the greatest historians of our common law, the greatest historians that have ever studied the subject. Two men, they seem to always work together, a couple of fellows from Britain named Frederick Pollock and Sir Frederick W. Maitland. And they wrote a book called History of the English Law Before the Time of Edward the First. That would have been back in Magna Carta before, going back before the Norman invasion. Edward the First was Edward Longshanks, and he was a good guy, a real good guy, although he was demonized, as Hollywood always gets things just exactly backwards. He was demonized in that movie called Braveheart. It was a story about William Wallace, and Wallace was the hero of Scotland, and they made Edward the First Longshanks look like a criminal. He was not. He was called Hammer of the Scots, but you got to remember too, the Scots weren't necessarily Sunday school teachers either. They were a pretty vicious bunch, and they did a lot of nasty things to people. So it was a rough time they lived in. But Edward the First was a pretty good guy. But Maitland and Pollock said this. They said, outlawry is the sentence of death pronounced by a community which has no police constables or professional hangmen. I want to repeat that. This is a couple of the learned historians of our common law said this. Outlawry is the sentence of death pronounced by a community which has no police constables or professional hangmen. To pursue the outlaw, they continue, and knock him on the head as though he were a wild beast is the right and duty of every law-abiding man. Now, they wrote that back in the year 1898, and they were Brits. They weren't Americans. They were observing how it worked in our common law tradition when we practiced our common law in its more pure form. And we didn't have policemen, and we didn't live in a police state as we do today. We didn't suffer the abuses of an armed government horde, jackbooted thugs. And men in the community were armed, and policemen, if there were any, were not armed, were not allowed to be armed, as it was, by the way, in America before about 1840. Policemen in the cities and the towns were not allowed to be armed. They carried blackjacks, clubs. No, not blackjacks. I get my my weapons mixed up. Billy sticks, blackjacks are made out of lead and leather. Billy sticks are just sticks. And you can just picture the old Keystone Cop movies with the cops in New York and New York City with billy sticks. And, of course, the bobbies in London with billy sticks and no guns. That's a vestige of our common law. Well, common law's ancient teaching called outlawry supplies a striking picture. Listen to me close. A striking picture of Jesus Christ's teaching of the new birth and new identity, demonstrating the common law's Christian character. That's fact. Outlawry is a doctrine that arises out of our Christian past. The declaration of outlawry against a man placed him outside the protection of our common law. Moreover, to try to protect such a man was unlawful. Thus, the common law called that one outside its pale outlaw. He was outside the protection of the law. This doctrine, by the way, if you grew up back in the 50s and 60s, you remember the Westerns. Well, outlawry was part of our tradition in America, beginning on the East Coast and then moving west as the territories opened up and there were no police forces. The common law outlawry was used. The outlaw is akin to the man in his trespasses and sins against God, without Jesus Christ and his law's protection, and under the final sentence of death. That's what outlawry was at common law. That's the way they saw it. Likewise, the only escape that the common law did afford from outlawry's deplorable condition was, and this is in our Constitution, pardon. Pardon of the executive power, which brought, by course of our common law, official forensic death to the former self of the outlaw. When an outlaw was pardoned, well, first, an outlaw was condemned. Anybody who found someone who had been outlawed by due process of law, anybody that found him had a duty to either knock him in the head or kill him or bring him in. Thus, in the old Westerns, the posters used to say, dead or alive. That was outlawry. His identity before he was pardoned, once he was outlawed, was that of a criminal, which the common law refused to protect and only condemn. You see, a man that's outlawed usually was one that would not submit to the processes of the law, due process, the courts, trial by jury. If he was accused of a criminal act and he got rabid in his blood, he turned tail and he ran. Well, then a jury had the power. No, not the king. That we've changed that a little, and we practiced it that way in America. And that's not really the way it was. We perverted our common law. But the jury, impaneled for that purpose, had the authority, the right, the jurisdiction to declare a man an outlaw. That means outside the protection of the common law, and his status was that of an unreasoning beast. That's the way the law looked at him once that happened. Good for nothing, as says Peter the Apostle, except to be caught and killed. Well, that's quoting 2 Peter 2:12. Until the year 1879, one could be declared an outlaw in English law. That means in England. Outlawry was part of their common law until 1879, and the possibility of outlawry in the country called Scotland lasted until, watch this, 1950. Prior to the Nuremberg war crime trials, the British Lord Chancellor, Lord Simon, with support of Winston Churchill, sought to use common law outlawry to empower others to capture fugitive Nazi war criminals. American lawyers, however, overruled, I said Simon, his name is probably Simon, overruled him and Churchill. Outlawry was used in the United States and its territories until after the turn of the 20th century, allowing return of a fugitive's body, dead or alive. At bottom, the harshness of outlawry reveals the great weight of the common law has given to answering summonses to participate in the common law courts. You see, if you didn't participate in the summons of a criminal trial and you were accused and you were hiding, you can be declared outlawed, and then you're in worse shape. Outlawry was declared on two levels at common law: civil outlawry, which was less harsh, and criminal outlawry, which was most harsh. Civil, that means non-criminal, outlawry was leveled against the one refusing to respond when sued in tort or debt, just a regular non-criminal lawsuit, and allowed for forfeiture. Watch this. If you were accused and outlawed non-criminally, you, by the decree of outlawry, no longer owned whatever you had owned before, whether it be wainage, plows and oxen and things you farmed with, or your house. But criminal outlawry was leveled against the one refusing to appear in court to answer for accusation of a crime, and carried the penalty of death at the hand of anyone finding him. Now, this is akin to the Old Testament law, which is makes good sense, of the refuge cities. If a man was accused, or he thought someone else would accuse him of murder because of an inadvertent manslaughter or some other reason, there were six towns, walled towns, designated throughout the territory of the land of Israel, and if he could run to within one of those walls, nobody could kill him. But if he was stupid enough to stay outside that city, he was fair game, and if anybody from the family of the dead man killed him, he was justified. That was it. There's more to it than that, but fundamentally, that was the way that worked, and common law outlawry was akin to that in many ways. But not as fundamental as common law outlawry, because as I had said before, common law outlawry arose out of the statement of John the Apostle in the third chapter of the Gospel of John, where he's talking to the member of the court of last resort of Israel called the Sanhedrin, 71 members. He was talking to a fellow named Nicodemus, and Jesus Christ said to this fellow — he met him at night so he wouldn't be seen, he was embarrassed — but Jesus Christ said to him, "Nick," he said, "it behooves you, it is fate to you that you be born up." Born up. People say born above, born again, that preposition there, Anna. The best way to describe it is to be born up. I remember Ronnie Reagan was talking to the prime minister of Canada, and both of them were of Irish extraction. And Ronnie Reagan and their wives were with them, and Ronnie Reagan said Canadian prime minister. Ronnie Reagan said to him, he said, "For a couple of Irishmen, we married up," talking about the high classiness of their wives. Well, that's what this word anageneo means, translated born again, born from above. More fundamentally, it means to be born up into a classier class. That's what it means. And at common law, if the only way to get out of outlawry, once a jury decreed it, was to gain a pardon from the executive power in Britain and in Anglo-Saxon and the Celtic tribes of Britain, that meant that you had to be pardoned. And when you were pardoned, this is the point, when you were pardoned, you entered into the world as a newborn babe. Outlawry made you nothing more than an animal. Matter of fact, the common law in the old Anglo-Saxon tongue, which was a Germanic tongue, the outlaw was said to be the Anglo-Saxon word means this. I don't know how to pronounce it. It means you're nothing more. Your head is worth nothing more than a wolf's head. And that's the way they described him. Well, what do you do with a wolf? Well, if you see him, you kill him. Nobody liked wolves. They were sheep killers, even people killers. They killed them. They were vermin. They were dangerous to them, dangerous to their livelihood, especially if they were herdsmen. So that's what the outlaw was. He wasn't a man anymore in the eyes of the law. He had lost all dignity. When he was pardoned, anything he had before he became an outlaw, whether it be millions of acres of land or 100 acres of land, a house, a family, titles of nobility, or stations in the church, maybe he was an elder in a church someplace, all of that, when he was outlawed, was taken away. And then when he enters the world again with pardon, he enters as a naked newborn babe. And as the Bible says, behold, Paul the Apostle says, behold, when you're born from above, all things become new. You're a new creature. The old has passed away. That's what outlawry was. And if you were pardoned, you entered the world as a new man. And, of course, that's why we have in our English-speaking world, in other parts of Europe, we have two names, one for our fleshly birth and one for our birth from above. Well, according to the ancient common law, the outlaw was no more than a wild beast. His head was worth no more than that of a wolf, for which a bounty was paid. And a bounty was paid. Watch the old westerns. Wanted $1,000, dead or alive. Well, see, that's the bounty. Well, that's what the bounty they used to pay on wolves. They wanted to get rid of them. We used to have a bounty on groundhogs where I came from. No kidding. And it was 50 cents for a groundhog tail. And every teenage boy in the county was all of a sudden an avid groundhog hunter. And over across the river in the neighboring state across the Wabash, they gave 50 cents for a set of groundhog ears at the courthouse. And those of us that lived along the border, along the river, we could double our money for every groundhog we kill. And every boy got him a .22 caliber rifle, and he became a very deadly groundhog hunter. Well, that's the way it is, by analogy. That's the way it was with the man that was, groundhogs were eating the crops. That was the problem. It was that they were wiping people out, soybeans, everything else. That's why they did that. Well, the Anglo-Saxons and Anglo-Danes called the outlaw Wolffirthfod. I tried to pronounce it. Wolffirthfod, which means bearing upon his neck the head of a wolf. Thus, any finding him as a duty, not just the option, but the duty, to either bring him in alive, capture him, or kill him. If you couldn't capture him and you didn't think you had enough force to do that, maybe you had enough force to kill him. You had to do it. As is the condemned sinner before God, the outlaw stood condemned in judgment without possibility of appeal and faced sure death. And in the earliest records, by the way, of outlawry, we find in the book of Genesis in the Bible, a fellow by the name of Cain, murdered his brother Abel. He was sentenced to outlawry with the Semitic comparative. It says, my sin, he said this to God, my sin embraces crime, guilt, and punishment, sin, law-breaking. He said, it's greater than can be lifted off of me. That means greater than can be forgiven. Well, that's, of course, the condition we're in. Before God, before the new birth, we're greater. We believe our sin is greater than can be forgiven. I've been told that a lot by people. God could never forgive me for what I've done. No, he can. If he can't, he's not God, so don't say that. Saying that is spitting in God's face. He can forgive you. I don't care how bad you think you were. And all of us are in that condition before the new birth. Well, pardon, then, was never a reformation. Never a reformation. Pardon of an outlaw was never a reformation of the former outlaw. It was a new birth. And again, that's what Christianity says. God's not out to reform anybody. He won't reform anybody. As a matter of fact, the analogy he gives us, he kills the old man and he raises a new one up out of that. And that's the new creature that Paul talks about through the new birth, the newborn child into the common law's protection. His old self is gone. And a new, different person is born, Augustine. Well, some people say Augustine. He was bishop of Hippo in North Africa about the year 400 A.D. He wrote a set of big book, I say it comes in a set sometimes, called The Sins of St. Augustine. And people say, well, what sins was there that he committed? Well, that's not the question. With him, it was so bad. People say, you read that book, you realize it. The question is there any sin the man didn't commit? And there isn't, hardly. So he's walking down the street in his hometown there in Hippo, and he sees an old carousing buddy that he used to go womanizing with and drinking and you name it. He did it. And philandering. And his buddy said, Augustine, it is I. Hollered at him. And Augustine said, yes, but it is no longer I. I've been born from above. Made all the difference in the world. Well, a pardon's official reckoning of death did in legal contemplation that which death does regarding any other person. Death, you see, canceled when you die, when I die, when people die, it cancels all former legal relationships, all benefits and burdens, all rights and responsibilities, all contracts are off. Even your relationship to your wife doesn't exist anymore because you won't even be married to her in the next life. Jesus Christ made that point. Although, you know, you may know her or him, but and you may be friends, but marriage is not part of the situation. Everything that you had when you die, any responsibilities, any benefits, it's over. You don't have those anymore. Consequently, the pardon outlaws former advantages, title held in property, title held in nobility, positions held or status achieved were unveiling for his advantage or pardon because they were evidences of his former guilty identity, which the law could only condemn. Now, we're talking about common law outlawry. That's the way the law looked at it. And you now are an outlaw, and there's no reverse in that. Once outlawry was decreed, there is no reverse in it. Why? Well, because as it is also in America today, once the jury speaks, that's it. There is no meaningful appeal from the verdict of a jury unless, as our Constitution says, the course of the common law was not followed. Well, that's the way it was with common law outlawry. Once the jury declared you an outlaw, your identity was permanently tainted, you were guilty, and all the law could do was try to kill you because you're guilty of a capital crime. Therefore, the only way that you or things could change is if you, being as good as dead, as the Bible says, dead in trespasses and sins, you must receive a new birth and a new identity. And that's what outlawry did. And when you're pardoned, and that's the only way out, you get that new identity. Moreover, the pardon canceled not only the advantages of all former relationships, such as all contingent and vested inheritance rights, so you're not even connected to your family, but also the disadvantages of unfavorable relationships, such as debts. If you owed something in the life before you were an outlaw, and then you get outlawed, and then you get pardoned, all those debts are over because you're a new person. Outlawry was a picture at common law of the new birth of which Jesus Christ describes talking to Nicodemus in the third chapter of John's Gospel. That's what it was. Well, I think I've talked enough. I've got more to say about this, and I want to say it. And with the indulgence of National Liberty Alliance, I'll say it next time. Gerard or John, whoever's there, appreciate again, the opportunity to say a few words about our common law.
Well, I like that outlawry. Can we use that against Schumer and Clinton? I would love that.
get your jury going. I don't know. Yeah. It is useful. It gives us relief to do something like that. Yeah.
There you go.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, before we get started, I just want to make an announcement that anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and then a 1, I believe, to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. Only got 3 people in the queue right now, so queue's open. Gerard?
Yeah. Okay, we got Crystal, and I'm going to unmute. Crystal, you're unmuted. No, I guess you're not. Let me try it again. It's not working. How come? For some reason, I can't unmute her. Can somebody else try her?
I'm trying for you right now. Hang on. I think she's unmuted now. Yep, she's unmuted. Crystal?
Crystal. Maybe we put her to sleep. Oh, she just showed unmuted on.
Well, now I'm trying. You know, it looks like, you see that question mark there? On the side? I'm hitting the wrong ones. Oh, boy, I hit a lot of people out of here somehow. Okay, anyway, anybody who was in the queue, star 6 to get back into the queue. I better keep my fingers off of it. Star 6 and a 1 to get back into the queue. Anyway, I don't see Crystal anymore. She needs to get back into the queue, Crystal.
Hey, we knocked her out of the box. All right, I'm just going to go from the top then and go down.
Yeah.
I wasn't cooperating before. All right.
Yeah, click the next button. That's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, that seems to work best, but I wanted to get her on because I figured we get her early. Okay, I don't know. There's no name here. You've been unmuted. 754 is the first three numbers of your phone. If you're there, I can't hardly hear you.
910.
You've been unmuted. Huh. I thought I heard something, but... Nope. 4095. All right, I'm going to try the next one. Going once, going twice, going three times. You'll have to get back in. Okay.
Andre, and again, everybody might want to check who went into the queue, star six and a one, because we accidentally hit about three people out of the queue. But go ahead.
I'm on to Andre. He's unmuted. Maybe this thing's not working because I don't hear anybody.
Oh, yeah, but I see they're unmuted.
You there, Andre?
910 just tried to talk, I think.
Oh, well, they're not even in there. How did that happen?
Well, I see him over the thing. Code 910, go ahead. And then Andre's also unmuted.
I don't see 910.
If you look over into the caller area.
Yeah. I hear something very low in the background.
Portobello Crab Imperial.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
I don't know if that's just noise coming in or somebody's got their volume, their mic settings very low.
Hmm.
Just sounds like background noise coming in on 910 there. Like they've got a radio in the background and their mic's open.
Hey, let me mute 910. And we'll try again for Andre. Andre, 229, area code. You got the mic.
Boy, I guess we put everybody to sleep, huh?
Yeah.
I don't hear anything coming from Andre. At all.
Move on to Dan, I guess.
We're just burning them down tonight, huh?
Yeah. Queue's about empty. Anybody wanted to get into the queue, star six. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay, Dan from Carolina.
Greetings to everyone. I just wanted to comment. I want to be courteous to the other people that are trying to get in. That 910754, I believe, in North Carolina, I believe it's the party that I've invited, but I don't know what the problem is there. But anyway, I just can say that we could go and search a lot of areas, and what we heard just last there about common law and back in the history and the just the meanings behind it and was just overwhelming. I'm just in awe. And with that said, I would like to... I came close last Monday night, and I don't spend a whole lot of time because we've got other people here. I asked a question between the common lawyer and what would be, and I know we need to move back here to some of the topics here this evening, so let's don't spend a whole lot of time on this, and what would be what would be a next friend. My suggestion, and you guys are going to hit me with a crowbar here, I guess, or a hammer, I'd like for us to think in terms, the fine job that Mr. John is doing, for us to have an actual title to someone, and they could be in study, to be a common law lawyer, helper in our common law courts. And that might be a new invention. Now, I do know what you said last week about the common lawyer is, in essence, pretty much predicated and known as to be a common law lawyer, is my understanding. What's your take on this?
Well, maybe I can comment on that a little bit. By the way, Brent is here, and he's both a lawyer and a common law lawyer. And look, we do need lawyers. You know, unfortunately, the Bar Association is the enemy of liberty, the enemy of freedom. They're really the minions of the New World Order. And all the lawyers that they pump out of their schools, they taint them with a lot of, fake law, if I may. And of course, they've lost our common law courts. They've concealed them, shut them up. We can't get into them. You know, that's one of the battles we're here for, is to open up a common law courts in every single county across America. But you know what? We do need trained lawyers in different areas. Just let's take the federal law alone, okay? When you get into the federal, there is 54 federal titles, okay? USC, United States Code titles. And each one of those, you know, some of those are, you know, let's take... goodness, I think USC 18. Well, I'm not sure how many pages, but some of these titles I have 1,000 pages, 900 pages. I mean, USC 26 has like about 8,000 pages, 9,000 pages of law. And of course, USC 26 is no law at all. It's just it's really fraud, is all that is. But all these other codes, all these other titles, they have a place, they have a meaning. And if you go look into it, you look for the jurisdiction in there, and we did a paper on this, by the way, where we identified each one of the titles on where they got the authority and the power to write these titles, which they got it, of course, from the Constitution, Article 1 particularly, Section 8. I mean, Section 8 or 9? I think it's 9. Section 9. And so they have the power and the authority. After all, you know, they got to write a law or, you know, policies and procedures, regulations, okay? Every federal agency has to have regulations. It's the policies and procedures of that particular agency. You know, corporations, large companies, companies that have a lot of people working for them, they have, the policies and procedures of the company, how to proceed with this and how to proceed with that, and you got to stay within the guidelines. And people are taught things and kind of the regulations within whatever the business that it is that they're doing. Well, the same thing in law. You know, we have all of these agencies. We also have different jurisdictions that law has to be written for, like bankruptcy laws. Maybe for someone to become a citizen, law has to become written for that. And all of that is lawful law, okay? And we need people educated in those laws. They don't have to go to school. I mean, they take a test and prove that they're knowledgeable and they're self-taught. But they need to be educated in whatever law they're going to practice. There's labor law, okay? There's all kinds of laws out there. Now, anything outside of that governmental structure, there's also commercial regulations and codes and so on is applied, and it's lawful, and we've given that authority to the legislators. But you take and USC 28 really is the rules of the court, the rules of procedure in the federal courts, and USC 28 sort of blankets all the other titles, okay, as far as, procedure, evidence, procedure of evidence, procedure, rules, and so on, of the court, okay? Now, the problem came here is when the court said to the legislators that they don't know what they're doing writing the rules of the court and different things. So they were given the authority to write the rules of the court, and of course there is a code it starts off with that says that anything that is it doesn't say it in these words, I'm paraphrasing, but anything that's repugnant to the Constitution and these laws are null and void. But the authority was given to the United States Supreme Court to write the rules of the court and the procedures, okay, and in that process, of course, is some distortment. And that's where they, you know, came. And first, second of all, you know, look at, we know the bar wrote it because, first of all of the lawyers are bar lawyers, okay? All of the judges are bar lawyers to begin with. You know, they went to bar school. They've been taught, you know, by the bar. And so they're, you know, they've got a lot of problems in their thinking, and they have to escape from a lot of their thinking in order to become a lawyer that's just, shall I say. And there are some of them out there, but very few. And but in any event, you know, they have this certain authority that they're working with in the area of their expertise. Okay, now, I wouldn't say authority, but their expertise to work in that area, to be able to counsel someone, to be able to help them. That's where representation is needed, okay, where maybe a lawyer does have to get up and speak on behalf of the people. But I think when you get into the natural law courts, okay, we're giving the right, well, we have the right how is it worded, not the right to counsel, but the right to, hang on, how is that written? Do you remember, Brent, the right to counsel, what the wording is?
Well, assistance.
Assistance. That's the word I'm looking for. Yes, the assistance of counsel. Because, look at, there is really no, when you get into the court of law, it's all about the facts. It's not about strategy of statutes and codes and how we can, you know, manipulate this and manipulate that or prevent someone from answering and all this other stuff that goes on. All of that is horrific to the justice system. The people need to get up there and speak. And again, you know, someone can't articulate themselves. That's really tough. But look, they can answer questions. And the lawyers will ask the questions, you know, the prosecutor or whoever, if it's a criminal case, or the other side. But the questions are asked, and, you know, you give your honest answers. And someone trying to hide the truth and fill the court with lies, eventually they'll be found contradictive, and the truth will unveil itself. But, you know, using bar attorneys, per se, or someone learned it in statutes in a common law court, a place where we're really looking for justice, could be a problem because of the way a lot of lawyers are trained. Now, I'm not sure exactly what the solution is here and exactly how to handle, you know, deal with this. But, you know, look at, anyone could be a next friend. Anyone can assist someone, especially if you have some knowledge of things and you can assist someone. That's, of course, lawful. They may say it's not. Maybe in the courts that they open, which are, you know, I don't know, foreign courts, really, maybe they make their claim. But when they came in and they started to, bring in the poison, okay, really start all the way back with the Organic Act of 1871. I think that was the date, 1871. With the Organic Act. It all started there. Of course, the plan started before that, but that's where the real dirty business started. And ever since then, they've been putting a lot of things into the law, and they seem to put it all, a lot of this stuff into, under the Penal Code, of course, which is USC 18. But USC 18, if you go look at the jurisdiction, it's the law of the sea and not the law of the land. It's maritime law. But the people don't know that. That's how ignorant we are. The lawyers don't know that. That's how ignorant they are. I'm sure the judges know that, but maybe they don't. I don't know. But they're calling it the jurisdiction, the law of the land, and it is no law of the land at all. So none of those codes apply to the people. None of those titles or regulations apply to the people unless you're participating in those things. So how do you become a common law lawyer? That's a good question. You know, first of all, a person who knows how to work the system, they understand how the system works. That's what a common lawyer must know. They must understand, you know, certain things about the law. They need to understand the difference between, you know, an equity court and a natural law court. And they should be educated. But you could be self-educated and go in and help someone. Maybe your knowledge is enough that you could be a common law lawyer. But for sure, you could be an ex-friend with some understanding and knowledge and trying to assist someone in a particular case. Papers need to be written, and people may need that kind of help. So the assistance of counsel is a necessity. But
well,
how do you define...
Don't the federal courts say, don't they say next friend? Isn't that in their language?
That's the language that's used. It's called the next friend, yeah.
Right.
And
so they should let them talk then. If it's in their language, how could they tell them they can't talk?
Well, absolutely. It's written
friend,
in the code,
how could
they
too. Say, well, you're not allowed to assist them.
Well, it's written in the code because, you know, I think they could do that. This is why I think they understand, at least on a federal level. I think they understand because they know the game. They sit in a safe place, and it's a jurisdiction that the person coming into doesn't know that they're in, okay? And they're able to manipulate that system and feel comfortable to be able to do those things and to deny. Look at some of these courts. Take USC 26. Okay, particularly, which is the worst of the worst, all right? And you follow the statutes in that. I mean, it just takes strips every right away from you. There's nothing for you. And they call it a court of record. They actually call it a court of record. So who is the king of that court? If it's a court of record, even if there's a jury, who is that jury serving? That jury is serving the USC code, 26. That's what they're serving. Okay, and if they're serving that code, who is that code serving? Okay, that code is serving the Federal Reserve, the IRS. So who's the king of the court? Well, the IRS is the king of the court, or the Federal Reserve is the king, or the Treasury is the king of the court. And, then you move over into the teaching of what was his name? Thornton, yeah, Bill Thornton. Okay, now Bill Thornton, you know, he's got a lot of good stuff, but he's off mark on a major point on the king of the court. You're not the king of the court. I'm not the king of the court. A king of a court of law, in the way under the common law and the natural law, is God himself. He's the king of the court. And that jury is the king's bench to do the will of that king. Okay? And the will of the king is to find the truth. And the truth is found by looking at the facts. And the facts will reveal the truth and the application of the law written in the hearts of men, seeing and knowing the wrongdoing and applying some restitution in one way or another and bringing justice. That's a natural law court. And it doesn't get any more difficult than that. Really, you need not know any literal statutes or laws anyway. I saw something today. It was a program I was watching with my family. And... somebody had made a statement. They were sitting in a room with all these law books and said, look at all this law, you know, how are you going to know all this stuff, you know? And the book, you know, wall to wall, ceiling to floor. We need know nothing of that. We don't need to know anything about that. The only thing we need to know is that law exists and they all fall into categories and into areas that we don't have any dealings with. Now, of course, you know, if you're going into construction and you may be involved in construction law, you're going to want to learn some construction law in order to deal with the courts in the under construction law. If you wanted to deal with the situation for the Labor Department or from some other item, you know, where the title, where all these, titles are written from, you know, whatever the subject matter is, okay? But interesting about 26... USC 26, which we mentioned earlier this evening, USC 26 has no jurisdiction. There's no jurisdiction applied other than the fact they call itself a court of record. So maybe they put a court of record up on the top, but that whole thing's a fraud also, you see? And that's where a problem could occur, you know, trying to make that argument that that's not a real court of record. And it's pretty simple because the United States Supreme Court has ruled on these kind of things and made statements through, you know, a lot of their rulings forever, for hundreds of years. And they've always, the understanding and the knowledge of these things being written is an understanding of the difference between equity and law. So it's already written within at least the Supreme Court. A lot of their rulings, the difference between equity and law, I mean, that's how I came to understand the difference between equity and law, is by really reading the conclusions of the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court. And of course, you go into Black's law, you know, they'll give you references of the United States Supreme Court on almost any word. that's in there. You, any word that identifies or deals with either natural law or our law. You know, there are, and that's another thing. There are 50 different jurisdictions. I remember we did a write-up on this one. I think it was 50 or 51, or maybe 49 or 51 different jurisdictions found in Black's Law Dictionary. At least that's all what I found. Maybe there's a little more than that, but that's all I could find. But I went through all the jurisdictions. 50 different jurisdictions. There's different courts for different things. And people need to understand the difference. If you're going to use Black's Law Dictionary, you're going to look at the meaning of words. You know, you got to be careful on what court is you're falling into that has nothing to do with us and has nothing to do with American jurisprudence, whether it's on the equity side and especially not on the natural law side. But generally speaking, the book is really about words and the meaning of words and the meaning of phrases. So generally, you don't really get hurt there. But you can get hurt if you don't understand. When you're studying through that there are 50 different or so jurisdictions. And again, statutes, as far as anything is concerned for us, is in a federal level is U.S. titles. Each state has their own statutes, which I've never really studied much on. I need to look into those things more on the state statutes and where they're applying. And again, they got to be applying also in the operations of the government and commercial business and things of that nature. You know, the Labor Department, which identifies with something commercial in some way, usually government work particularly. And what's the other one? The motor vehicle. Okay, that has some merit to it for commercial services and needs and so on. So, you know, again, we got to figure this stuff out, but it's, you know, once it's laid out, again, this, you don't need to know a wall full of books of knowledge. You need to know nothing, just the fact that they're categorized somewhere and they have some merit somewhere, but it has nothing to do with you. So hopefully that's helpful.
I'd say it is. There's probably some other people that would like Mr. John to ask some other questions, so we better not maybe spend but just a second on this one that I'd like to ask Renee.
Before you go, hang on a second, let me just make an announcement because we only got one other caller in the queue with you. Anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, and I believe it's a 1 to get into the queue. Questions or comments, star 6, and then a 1. Go ahead.
It behooves me from the fine instructions that I've heard every Monday night, especially Mr. John, I just think you're godsend. And with that said, and all the others, Jan and all the others and the different commentators that we have are just marvelous, and they're superb. With that said, it behooves me with where we are in the juncture of getting the common law court system more written in stone in the way of possibly having a courtroom to go to and other things. It behooves me to say, shouldn't we set a committee where that we might find these fine civil servants such as you, Mr. John, and various others that have been doing papers to help and assist others, and godly only knows how many assistants behind are there with your present organization that we have. And one other thought is that I have been aware of back in time of what would be a constitutional lawyer or attorney. I believe constitutional attorneys might be closest to anything that we have here in America that could be founded.
Well, that's the common law. Understanding the powers and the authorities of your government, you need to know the Constitution. Understanding your unalienable rights and your right of due process, that you look into the Bill of Rights particularly, understand those things. And, of course, history, American history particularly. That's really where our law is at, and to apply those fundamental laws, which would be natural law. Look at the Constitution is a natural law document. It's the right and the authority of the people to write the Constitution, the laws of their own government, and require them to be chained by those, the change of that Constitution. So that's our unalienable right. So that's common law. You know, they play a game with codifying, you know, when they turn around, they talk about civil rights, okay? Particularly using that word in 13, USC, 14, not USC, in the 14th Amendment. And so they play around with that word civil rights. Our founding fathers never used that language. They've never, I haven't seen it anywhere. I don't recall ever seeing it anywhere. Maybe it's somewhere, but I've never seen it where our founding fathers, any of them, referred to civil rights. You don't find civil rights in the Federalist Papers. I haven't seen it. You do get the United States Supreme Court often will quote the 14th Amendment and use the word civil rights. They use just the word rights, and they're unalienable rights. Okay, that's what we have, unalienable rights. And so when you use civil rights is something that's codified, something that's created by putting it on paper. And it is true that we, the people, did codify certain rights, certain unalienable rights in the Bill of Rights. So we codified that. And they will use that and play that as a game. And if they can convince the people that rights come through statutes, that they come through the statutory process, which is the civil process, if that's the way that it comes comes out and people are ignorant and don't know any better, then we can erase some of those rights and put other rights. Again, I'm trying to think where I saw this somewhere today. As a matter of fact, there was a conversation somewhere I was listening to concerning the rights, particularly the Second Amendment. And the person who was talking was anti-Second Amendment. And they didn't understand where the Second Amendment comes from. They talk about, oh, just because there's a law that people can have guns, they think they can do anything with it. They think they can have gun and have any gun, or they can just have weapons at all, blah, 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 blah. And, and the position of that person was that this needs to be done away with. We've got to get rid of the Second Amendment. Obviously, they don't understand, and the people that are listening to them don't understand that these are unalienable rights, the right to defend yourself, particularly from your own government. That's what that is all about. When the First Amendment fails, you got the Second Amendment to back it up, and of course the other amendments too. So if you decide to get rid of government, you might need your guns to do that. So again, people, the ignorance is the problem, and it starts with anybody who's listening. That's where it starts. It starts with you and me. And the realization of how ignorant we really are and how much we really need to learn. But again, I think a lot of people fear what we're doing because they don't understand what we're doing from the standpoint that they think they'll never be able to do all that. They haven't got the time to go out and learn lore and figure all this stuff out. They don't understand how simple it is. I mean, yeah, you take a six-month course with us, that's about it, and you got everything you need to know for life. And you'll be able to carry away a book that you can use as a reference of everything you've learned. And that's one of the big messages we have to get out, I think, is law is not as complicated as people think. You know, we're not here to deal with law where there are loopholes and things to get out of this or that. Playing strategy. No, we're here. Law is really law. Real law is all about the truth. It's about the facts. It's simplistic.
It doesn't help that they give you a civil cover sheet and they don't give you a court of record. And so they're putting you in an equity court right off the bat. You're starting off on your back in these courts because they're not recognizing our unalienable rights. They're not trying them. Everything is codified. It's all about balancing the scales and money. And, you know, the other thing we didn't mention as far as bringing people into court is they have something called a private attorney general. We kind of touched on that to and fro years ago. And the way I understand it, that if you have a person that's learned in an area and it's an issue that's not a personal issue for him, that it will benefit the public at large, a judge can commission this guy and give him the title of private attorney general, where he can go in the courts and practice that law in that area. And that's kind of what Rod Class had. He had some kind of commission to be a private attorney general on those issues that he was fighting, those gun issues. And it is recognized under common law and under, you know, but they don't like to do it because, look at the private attorney generals that were out there, they caused them a lot of trouble. They were like a burr under their saddle. And some of them were a little bit loose anyway. You know, they didn't really learn the court procedures, so they were really, you know, like I said, a burr under the saddle, so they weren't too pleased with them. But it is a valid thing, a private attorney general. We never completely looked into it to see how you do that, but I did run across an article that said that it's a judge can give a commission to a private person to practice law in that area, in that court, in those courts. So that's just another something to think about.
And you know, going to procedure and things of that nature, particularly how the court kind of ticks, okay, and you know, using the procedure that they have is fine, you know. The key thing to that, and there's not much to it really, is just understanding the necessary papers that need to be written in order to open a court up. But, you know, even with that, a court of record can be opened up as simple as an affidavit. The only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit, period. Your sworn statement on a paper stating your case. That's all that's necessary. But, you know, look, you do have to notify everyone. You have to prove that you've notified everyone, so you got to get, you know, proof. Notifying the people of a court case opening or a motion going forward, and that. But that's all statutory, really. That's in the equity side of things. And
hey,
people
I just had an
this...
epiphany.
Huh?
You just gave me an idea. About
yeah, but you see,
the
on the equity side.
How about when you notified them that you declared that this I'm opening a court of record and we're operating under common law on your notice to those people? We've
well, that's how
that.
We're moving forward. So that's how this next case is moving forward, with some
yes.
of that kind of language.
Right,
so.
Because they, when you notify them, they can't deny that they didn't know that this is a common law court of record. And if they say, what's that? We say, well, sit down, we'll teach you. But anyway, go ahead, I'm sorry.
But bear in mind, you still have to understand the equity procedure. Because, look, more often than not, you have an issue. You know, I was a contractor, a construction manager, general contractor, and from time to time I'd have to go into the court, a lot of my arguments would be made, particularly maybe on the site itself, in front of engineers or architects, who would be the sort of the judge, because that's the way the contracts are written up. But if it ends up inside of a court, okay, where, you know, you build a house with someone or an addition and you run into an issue and you can't settle it, and then you take it into the court trying to get your money or whatever. And so there's a procedure there. I'd much rather go into an equity court. You know, it's a one-day thing. You're in and out. I mean, once you file all the papers, there's no big things involved here. It's simple things, you know, that someone breaks a contract, it's usually just a very simple thing. Failure to pay, proof of failure to pay, proof that work was done, and that's it. It's not like you have to spend, you know, months and years going back and forth and doing things. No, you go back and forth with your paperwork a few times, and then you finally get in there, and you allow a judge to make a decision in an equity court. The statutes or the law of the court is really the contract. Okay, any contract I ever written, I always referred back to the AIA standards in construction, and I understood them from beginning to back because I was a contractor. I needed to know what is required of me, what is required of the other person, how does a contract, you know, what would put a conflict inside the contract as you're working, you know, what would cause an action, and then you know, what can you win and what you can't win, where you're right and where you're wrong. It's all written down pretty clearly in what's called contract law, really, and that was negotiated. That particular construction law was negotiated between the American Association of General Contractors and the American Association of Architects, and they worked together to create this. like a law, really. You know, it's the way the contract. It's the contract, but it's also the law. So you need to know if you go. And why would I want to go into an equity court and not a court of law? Because a court of law may take a while to go through all the process. You still have to get a jury together, and then you have to get in there and argue the point. You could do this on paper in front of a judge. As long as he's honest and the judge is righteous and he has no skin in the game where he leans this one or that one, you know, and right now we don't have those kind of judges. But I did find one here or there over the years that really was, you know, there was nothing. He didn't have to rule either way by requirement to maintain status quo. He just ruled on the case. But it's hard to find these days because, you know, usually even in construction, you're dealing with big stuff sometimes. You know, those people have some connections and favors, and they can work their way into the court and get things done in the wrong way, and you have problems. You know, it's all crooked. But if judges were righteous and judged what they see on the paper and what's, you know, they hear in the court, then it could be trusted. Right now they can't. Get to the other side of things, I think we can move back to that part. So people do need to understand certain structure of paper process in the court, you know, and there's not much to it. There really isn't. I think we did an anatomy of a court case, which we will have inside the book and probably inside the court case maybe. I mean, inside the course that we have online. Anatomy of a court case, and you see all the paperwork, the motions, the affidavits, everything, you know, that makes up the necessities, the building blocks of a case, especially in equity. So, but again, this is not really difficult stuff. You don't need, you know, 4 years of education in order to learn these things, and even more to get further in depth. For instance, some of these titles if you're in the federal level. But we don't need to know all those books because really it's all about the facts and the contract.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Just a point of interest. I got called on jury duty one time, and it was for a case that had involved a contractor builder and a pair of teachers that were living in a house that he built that they never finished paying him for. And it had drug on for 4 or 5 years, and they were picking a jury. I ended up bugging off on it because I was self-employed and I didn't feel like I could sit there.
I can't think of any case, and I've seen a lot of them over the years, not only ones that I've been involved with, but other contractors, other people involved with. I can't think of any case that should take any more than one long day in court. Most cases, an hour or two.
You never met these two teachers then.
Well,
because I'm telling you, when I heard the case and saw what was going on, I was already going to rule for the contractor because they pulled every dirty trick in the book to try to not get to pay him, you know, as far as claiming he didn't do the work and blah, blah, blah. It was really bad. And, I mean, maybe that's why they went with a jury. I don't know.
Well, again, you know, that is a problem going with the jury because, again, you got the lawyers coming in there. You're playing an equity thing here. And all these statutes, there's all these, you know, things that they can manipulate and use to, you know, get away from, you know, having to, apply justice ultimately.
That's unusual, isn't it, that a contractor would end up in a court with a jury? I mean,
not really. You know, for them, yes, only because there's something going on there. That's why. And look at when the jury. How long can you spend talking about the problem? You know, again, when there's a violation in a contract in construction, particularly, okay, when there's a violation somewhere, it's very simple. Either someone failed to perform or someone failed to pay. That's the only two things that are involved.
They had possession of the house and the mother gave it to the daughter. And there was all kinds of things that they did to cloud the issue somehow, I guess. Because, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. This guy was going after them. And now that
Bobby had
the original
construction, I'll bet you too, because that's a major problem.
What's that?
They probably had lawyers that don't know construction, and that's a major problem. Especially a contractor, if he doesn't take it up on his own to take control of his own case, because he's the one who knows what's going on the website, on the site. He's the one that should know what the contract requirements are, what performance is necessary. That's all in the contract. And AIA standards and the AGC standards, they're all laid out. What the procedure is. It's very simple.
Wish I would have stuck around. I probably would have learned something, but I just thought I'd mention that. I mean, to me, it was an odd thing, and I really didn't figure out the meat and potatoes of it.
I didn't see any reason for any case going on that long. I mean, look at what's going on in Washington, okay, with what Trump is dealing with and all those criminals. Yeah, those cases are huge, and they can go on for a long time. I can see that. But generally speaking, most cases, this is ridiculous. Look, why are we wasting so much money on this to begin with? Court cases can be done away. Look, whatever paperwork has to exchange, if it's equity, then get in there and deal with it. But even if it's going into before a jury, you know, you want to get your communications back and forth to get your positions and your strategy as far as, you know, understanding what the position of the other side is so that you can counter it and vice versa. But again, let me get back to the basics. When it comes to construction, it's only two things. Either they performed or they didn't perform. And on the other side, either they paid or they didn't pay. If you performed, payment is required, nothing to talk about. Okay? There's no other argument there. You know, who's responsible for the problem? That could be a situation. But again, how much could that be involved with? You know, I've been involved with a lot of things, and again, my longest case ever on a construction case, which was before arbitration in a court, okay, but it was arbitration because that's what we checked off and required on the contract, and it's either by the architect, the engineer, or you can get an outside arbitrator. And the longest case I've ever been on was 6-7 hours. That was it, one day. And I don't even think it was that long. It was late for the day. It took a long time for that day, but 6-7 hours maximum. And, you know, I don't know. But again, court cases should not be going on forever. People shouldn't have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars like I hear they do to defend themselves when they're accused of something on the federal level. You have to have a lot of money to be able to defend yourself. And people can't do it. We need to have this going into, if people are facing a criminal complaint, and jail time is potentially possible, then they need to be in a natural law court, which is more concerned about the facts than anything written by any legislator.
Mr. John, do we have some other people in the queue?
We do now, yeah. So, we'll have to move on.
I've got some other questions, but I'm going to yield, and maybe I might be able to, they'll be simple, but I want to yield because I want to be fair to other people.
Yeah, hit star 6, you can get into the bottom of the queue, maybe we'll get to you, we'll see.
Yeah, Crystal is back in a queue, too.
Yeah, but I don't know whether, all right, you want to try to just unlock her to get her in, Gerard?
Yeah, I can do it.
On the bottom. Go ahead, Jan, I didn't have good luck last time.
Are you saying for me to go ahead?
We're going to take the next caller. If you want to
get back in the queue, we'll do these three people, and then we'll go back to you.
Okay, Crystal should be unmuted.
Are you there, Crystal? She doesn't look unmuted.
Hello?
On my screen.
Yep,
there she is.
Hello?
I heard her.
Hello, can
speak
you hear me?
Now.
Hello?
We can hear you. Go ahead, Crystal.
Okay. All right.
Sounds good.
Hi, how are you? I was in court today. As a matter of fact, I got a letter on Saturday stating that my bankruptcy was discharged when I just filed it on Monday. So I had it all finished, completed, and I brought it down there and had it stamped, so I got my copy, gave them their copy. We rushed over to the Superior Courthouse, which it was most of that for argument and the paperwork that I sent you, and also the police report. And what I did, I sent you the package, and it would be very helpful for everyone. Because what they did to me, which they said was criminal, so I finally got all my police reports. I sent all that in, faxed it, and I also, on last Thursday, I had to call it in marked ready, which I did that, and I also faxed it to them. So when I got into court this morning, they all got their little love package from me. And I sent it to the Attorney General. I sent it to the all of our congressmen, our senators. I sent it to Washington. I sent it to our state attorney general. I sent it to the chief state attorney's office, and to quite a few others. So this way they cannot sit there and say that they didn't know about it. And I guess when they saw, well, the bankruptcy, that was one, but also the police report about the illegal foreclosure. And I also had that, well, everything was all to East files. Then they turned around and they said, the judge, when she got in there this morning, she said, well, I'm only going to be hearing the cases that are marked ready. And if you didn't call it in on Thursday, have it marked ready, you are not going to be heard or whatever. So I had a feeling she was referring to me, and then somebody had texted me stating that you're not marked ready, which I knew I had marked ready and all. And so when it came to after when she had, you know, said, is there anybody I didn't call? I said, yes, she did not call me. She goes, well, you cannot speak because you were not marked ready. I said, oh, but I am marked ready. And I said, I have it, the proof in my phone that I called you, plus I have my receipts that I faxed each one. And so then this young gentleman stood up and stated that he was there to represent the new owner of my property, NGE, and that he said, yes, she did call him Mark Reddy. He goes, but she also filed bankruptcy. But he could, his face was, you could see, because he didn't want me to speak or go over my evidence, the new evidence that was presented, because there's a police report with that the attorney's names and a few others from day one. And so she goes, well, she filed bankruptcy and stuff like that. And she goes, and I have no jurisdiction over her. But right before mine, there was another woman in there, I guess, who filed bankruptcy. And I guess because they all received that, my package, she goes, she...
Well, you know what? Before you go any further, I think that, you know, and I think this is what you're saying, maybe, I don't know. But when you moved over into bankruptcy court, they have the jurisdiction now over any potential, you know, debt that you may owe. So therefore, that person said they don't have jurisdiction. I think that is the fact. I wonder if Brent, if you're still here, maybe if you can comment on that. You know, if a mortgage company is trying to use a local court to foreclose on you, and you're in bankruptcy court, that court case has to be shelved.
Yes, but something was changed in our state, I think 2 months ago, stating whether you file it or not, we can still take your property.
Yeah, I don't know that they could do that. Well, you go look for that you know, find out where that legislation is, and let's take a good look at that.
Okay.
I don't know how that could possibly be done.
Because what happened... After they changed it, back in April, February, I believe it was February, they recently changed it. Two people I know that got their warranty deeds on their property a year ago, they put on their property, they had abandoned the property, which they were just put on their property about 6 weeks ago, which is criminal. And I told them, I said, file a police report. Because on your, you got your warranty deed, number one. Number two, they have on your paperwork and on your on this mortgage that you abandoned your property and they got a new person's name on there. You were still in your property, so that's criminal what they just did with theirs. But you know what? I can't sit there and fight and argue with people about what they're going to do. I said, I only can do what I have to do for myself. And when I went to file for my police report stating that this is criminal, I said, because even when you file with the warranty deed or anything you file, everything is numerically in order. This is the work I did for 40-some-odd years. So, you know what I'm saying? I knew exactly what to look for. And mine is so messed up. And then when I told you how they, on my property on the land records, they turned around and changed and deleted all my land records from the time I purchased my property, 2000 to 2015, which I had everything filed and they deleted everything out. But thank God I have my copies and the records. And also, the, you know, I said, well, this is fraudulent, what was done. So I do have my report, my police report and all that. And,
well, again, and you're absolutely right. It that's fraud. It's a crime. And, you know, that just concealment or removal or destruction of a paper that's in file is a crime. And I can't think of any, you know, if they do change the papers, you have to see the history of where that came from. I mean, you can't just delete everything. You can't just throw everything away.
Well, ironically, it's a good thing, John, what I would always go and pop up. And this particular day, I was in there for, I think I was up there either paying my tax or whatever. I said, let me go and take care of this. And when I put it in the computer on my property, I said, what the heck is this? So I got the printout of it, and they were shocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And all right, so do you have to go back again? What are you doing now?
They sent me the paper for next week and
following week. They just
don't
stop.
No, they won't stop, but you know what? They wanted me out of that court and stuff today. And by the way, another thing that happened...
Well, you filed with the federal court, so that's already filed. They've been served, and that's the thing you have to bring up to them. You know, we can't go any further until you deal with this federal issue now of my denial of due process in this courtroom right here, right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, they sent that back to me also.
Who sent it back to you?
The
federal judge?
Wait a minute. Those papers have to go to the federal judge, right?
Well, I served that for you. That's done. So you've been filed in the federal court. That's all. That's already done, and that was done a week ago or so. Now,
right.
They've all been served. You've served them all the papers, right?
Right. I served them the superior.
Okay, and you're supposed to give me the affidavit of service. I don't think I have that yet. I'll have to check. I don't think I got
that
yet.
Okay, I got, yeah. Okay.
So you got to get that to me. The thing is that you're in the federal court right now. If the federal court tries to shut you out again, whatever paper they send, you send to me, and I'll deal with it from this point for you. When the federal court, that you push the issue, because you're going in there for cause. Okay, federal courts will throw you out at the least little thing. They don't want to hear your case. They just don't want it. Okay, and any little thing that they'll throw you out on it. And unfortunately, they'll throw people out that are coming in trying to get help and assistance, and they know that something's wrong, but they don't know how to articulate themselves. They don't know how to put it on paper. And these judges, they don't want to be bothered with it. And because of that, there's so much injustice going on. And also the cost to get into a federal court, you know, if you have to have a lawyer to do it, you know, they ask for a lot of money down before they'll even try to approach a federal court. And I've found lawyers that have done this. And they've been thrown out of the court because they didn't couch their papers correctly. They went in trying to move the entire case, which is surprising for a lawyer. But they don't. I don't know that they teach them these things. I don't know. But You know, you can't move a case from the state in a state issue into a federal court. That belongs in the state court. But if it's a federal issue, and the issue, again, we constantly talk about is the denial of due process, that's the cause. And if it's clearly stated that way and you're in there only to deal with that cause, that problem, nothing else, okay, and then your recourse or your wherefore clause on the final end is, you know, cease and desist if you're not going to give me, due process. And that's the order from the federal court down to the other court. Should be a no-brainer real quick, you know, read through the papers and put the order out. There's nothing to it. I mean, wait for the other side to make their claim, whatever they want. But bottom line, denying due process, you can't do that. Shut the court down. That's an order from the federal court unless you're prepared and able to be able to give this person the due process. And that's what you're not getting. You're totally being ignored in that court. You're not getting your due process. And they're just trying to railroad you every which way. And you know, just think of the abuse they're doing to you. Every Monday you seem to go to court.
You're right, exactly.
Every Monday, the stress. Why, they're in such a hurry, you know. Look at what court cases move that quick, okay? They don't, you know, if you didn't have all these little things that you've done that's thorns in their side, you would have been long gone, done with. But, you know, they keep dragging it on. Most court cases, you go, oh, we'll be back, let me see my calendar, oh, 2 months from now, you know. They didn't do that to you, and they're not doing that to you. They're railroading you, and they are steamrolling this case forward.
Well, but you know what? Again, that is, you know, I think, because everybody's coming out in every direction. But with the police report now it has to turn in. It's a criminal case, so now they're all involved and they have to respond. Okay.
Right.
And
also they have to respond to the federal thing.
And the federal court, so they got to come in on all sides. But one thing, what happened to this woman today in the court? We all looked at each other because she also filed with the federal
court. And after this point, Crystal, after this point, we've got to move on. So anything important. Try to get that into you.
What happened? Because I guess she was nervous, the judge at this point, because she didn't know who was in that courtroom. So what happened when the woman filed for bankruptcy and she said, I was discharged. So she goes, well, I don't see anybody in here. When I called up the case, she goes, there's nobody here from the bank. Nor is their attorney, so I have to dismiss your case. And we all looked at each other. So
really?
Yeah. So they didn't know.
You know, I've been to bankruptcy court, and I'm telling you, when nobody shows up.
This wasn't bankruptcy. This was the Superior Court, the ones that's been taking everybody's property. And another thing.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, even there, I mean, look at these people. Why aren't they there? That judge should be on their cases trying to find what's going on here.
Well, she left the woman. She dismissed it. She dismissed it. The woman got to keep her house today. I'll tell you that.
Is this in a different court?
This was the Superior Court, the one who's been halfway.
They dismissed the case because they dismissed. But the case. Now hold on a minute. She was bringing a case against someone, or they were bringing a case against her.
Yeah, they were bringing the case against her to steal her property.
Well, then and they didn't show up, so he dismissed the case.
So right, but that was the right thing.
But that's a good thing.
Right, that's what I said. We all looked at each other and said, wow. I said, she's nervous because she was doing the right thing, which should have been done.
Finally.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's what I
said. We've got a lot of people in the queue, so.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, anything else? Are you done?
I'm done. Yeah, but I'll get those papers over to you.
And we'll get some more info next week. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Oh, by the way, John?
Yeah.
Hello? There is a big a meeting in the Bronx. I sent Jan, I talked to you. This coming Thursday in Brooklyn, New York, the Attorney General's about all these illegal foreclosures and all that.
What's going on?
They're having a big... Jan, did you get the text? I texted it to you. This coming Thursday, the Attorney General, I guess they want to hear the people from New York, Connecticut, New Jersey...
All right, well, we'll get more information on that, okay?
Yeah, it's this coming Thursday.
Okay.
And it's about all these illegal foreclosures that's going on.
Right.
Okay. I will get you that information. All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, Gerard, I'm going to push the button for you, okay? Got your next caller up there.
Yeah, John, I have two questions. One, what was the address for where YouTube where you're putting those videos?
Well, that's a question for Gerard. Gerard?
I don't know.
Or Terry, maybe? Terry?
Yeah, Terry's got it.
We will put it up on NLA News. And I forget whether it has a space or not, but it's NLA News on YouTube. They're not there yet. I can't do it right now.
Okay, I looked there and I didn't see it, so that's why I asked.
Yeah, we're not ready. I was waiting for the okay. We can post those videos. I just hadn't gotten it yet. Now I do. I will. Okay?
Great. And the other question is really directed at Brent. A while back, you made comments that a person has to hear something a certain number of times before they understood it, and I'd like to know the criteria that you utilize to come up with that number, whatever it is. I'm not sure. I thought you said 28.
I don't know. Brent, are you still here? You're muted.
I think
you
said it
takes
10,000 hours to become an expert at it something. And that
oh,
was some other expert said.
Yeah,
that you
that's,
have to study 10,000 hours.
Yeah. Absolutely,
in order to
I agree with that.
An expert or efficient at a particular job, and that was from some other expert in the field. That I mean, I guess they know that when they're giving courses and stuff, you know. But I'm pretty sure that that was the number, 10,000 hours of study.
Yeah, anybody that
specialty. Go ahead. That's it.
Yeah, anybody that got that kind of time into any subject should be mastering that subject, you know. I remember I listening to my Bible teacher, that lifelong Bible teacher. You know, he died a few years back, but I've known him most of my life, and my adult life anyway. And, you know, he was teaching, and he's mentioned numerous times, you know, that he'd had thousands of hours of study in the Bible, and that's how he was able to come to certain understanding and being able to bring things together and so on and so forth, because he was so intimate with the Bible, okay? And over my time, I became the same way. I've got thousands and thousands of hours studied in the Bible. And then you become very articulate. You're able to articulate it and bring things together, and understandings come together and verses come together because you're spending all the time in it. You're working on it. Your brain's working on it. And it's the same thing with any subject matter. You know, since I started working the law here, I've been doing this now for 8 years, and every day I'm in the books. I'm reading, studying, learning, writing, you know, cutting and pasting and making notes and law notes and footnotes and memorandums and writing a book now and of course, writing the courses. And, you know, you spend so much time with this stuff, you can't help but retain a lot of it. And that's the key to any subject, anything you want to master. Spend the time. Now you can have good knowledge on something. You know, you have to figure out, well, how much time. What's the most important things in my life? You know, where am I going to put most of my time? What is my expertise that I need to know to be good at what I'm doing and earn a living and so on and so forth. And that's the key. So. There are things that you don't have to master, and you put a little time here and a little time there, and you get enough to get by. That's fine. But the things that you really want to master, you know, you need to put the time in. But as far as law, what we're doing, if anybody puts a good 6 months into this, they'll have a good understanding and be able to work themselves through the system. But to really be really proficient in it, you really want to start reading, you know, be reading Federalist Papers, reading, you know, books on Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, you know, the making of America, the common law. I mean, you know, you read these books and you can't retain it all, but you're pulling out what you need to know as you read, and you're fixing it into your brain, and you're becoming more and more familiar. And before you know, you know, you start articulating these things, and they just the words just fall out of your mouth, you know, because you're working on it. So I don't know if 10,000 hours is the that's a lot of days, but maybe that is correct. You know, I'd have to figure out what 10,000. Let's say if you put 8 hours a day for a year, so it's 365 times eight. Okay, that's 3,000 hours. So maybe 10,000 hours is right. You know, you know, if you put 4 to 6 to 8 years into a subject, you should be really gone good at it. If you, well, I don't know if people are putting 8 hours a day in it though. You know, again, a student would.
If you're working an apprenticeship, that's kind of what you do.
Yeah.
If you're apprenticeshipping, so you're at it all day long. And I did an apprenticeship, and you know the basic course was to pass it was 2,000 hours, but you know, generally speaking, it was accepted in generally accepted, I guess. You know, once you
well, that
once
may be the standard, but the master will go 10,000 then. If you want a master, you want to do 10,000 hours.
You need 10 years, like let's say in the mechanic business with the technology. After 10 years, you should know just about everything that you need to know to from soup to nuts. You know, to be considered, you know, like a master mechanic. I mean, they got courses you take in licensing that you could do it much shorter than that. But I think in order to run everything that to run into every situation and really understand things, you know, after 10 years, you pretty much run into just about everything that you could and worked on every problem, and that's in an apprenticeship stages. You know, most people, you know, you could do it in eight, but a lot of people they work in training.
If you have good teachers or professors or whatever, then yeah, you could do it better because they can give you the knowledge, the experience, knowledge
and,
that you.
And it depends on how technical the field is, like. You know, look at carpentry and building. It's technical, but it's not as technical as mechanics because mechanics got electronics and this and that, hydraulics and this and that. So, you know, look at you could be a good journeyman carpenter. And I don't see, you know, 6-8 years, you've done just about everything that you need to do as far as, like, let's say, building a house, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, let's take the subject here, the law, okay? Well, we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance, okay, which all falls under what we've put up as consent of government. And ultimately, what's in that book is what every American should know. Now, it may have taken me 8 years to be able to accumulate the knowledge to be able to write that book, okay? And in that process, in my case, and in the case of anybody studying the law, usually they're really trying to get to it. They don't really have anyone to learn from. They gotta explore and read and figure it out on their own. You know, you can't go to a website. You can't trust the most of these websites out there. They're filled with a lot of garbage and false, fake stuff. It's just not real. It's not true. They give you strategies and philosophies on things that it'll never work. And you're only going into their, into their sandbox. But that's the first thing you have to do is realize that just because someone said something's true doesn't make it so. You have to find the source. Are the people giving you the source? Are they giving you the facts? Okay, so that you can look at them and handle them yourselves and say, yeah, this is the truth. This is what it is. Okay? Or are they just giving you conclusions, their conclusions? And then you run with their conclusions and you find yourself trapped in a situation and stuck and you can't win and you wonder why you lose because you think you got something right when you got it all wrong. And I'll tell you, these websites on common law all over the place, I haven't found one really good out there yet. And, you know, especially the stuff that they're trying to teach, you know, and learn about how this conspiracy really took place, and then they give you solutions for it. Their solutions are wrong, the way they proceed in it. So the point is, you know, when I used to do a lot of Bible studies, you know, some of my studies might have taken years to come to a conclusion, you know, study that I keep going back to and going back to, and then finally I finish it. It's a very difficult study, maybe a study that requires a lot of digging and exploring and looking into the meaning of words and phrases and all that stuff. And then you put it all together, and then you come and teach it in a Bible class or any sermon, any good sermon, okay? You know, you delivered a year's worth of work in 1 hour, okay? And that's kind of, if you have a good teacher, you got someone that really explored it, like the book we put together, it's all facts. It's filled with sources. You can trace every sentence, every word you can trace someplace to find that it's true, okay? Because we're filled with footnotes and references. And so you know, a book like we're putting out, literally you can benefit from 8 years of study and get it in a 6 month time, okay, taking your time going through it, and have it as a reference book. You know, there's that old saying that's been around forever, especially in the sciences, that we stand on the...
Nope, we lost John. He's gone. Hello? Hello? I don't hear John.
The lifetime to discover the truth. Yeah, I was talking. Did anyone hear that?
You blanked out. I don't know. I lost you.
Okay. Well, let's move on. You got it.
Thanks. That's all I had.
Yeah. You know, the trouble is, look what it takes to get a doctorate. You know, you do 4 years, and you do 4 years, and then you specialize for 2 years, and then you do clinicals and all that, you know, so before you're done, you got 10, 12 years wrapped up. But there's a problem with the doctorates, because they're teaching a lot of stuff that's not so, and we're finding that out now. We're finding out that they have a reductionist theory, which brings everything down to a cause and effect pathogen, and it turns out that that's not the case. That a lot of stuff that the doctors are telling us what to do, guess what? They're wrong. And the trouble with that reductionist Newtonian theory is it relies on like Darwinism, basically. And their problem is they don't, you know, they don't believe in a life force. They don't believe in a God. So everything they do at the end of the day, even though they can give you certain reliefs and they're very good at mechanically keeping the body together, I'm sorry, but your modern medical doctors are no good with chronic health care. They got nothing. I wouldn't follow hardly anything they do. All they do is put Band-Aids. They're not preventing, and they're not fixing anything. Ultimately, you know, everything they do just brings you down the road further where you're going to die miserably, and I've come to that conclusion after years and years of studying and watching people die under their system. So, you know, just because you got a double master's in this and that in a certain subject, look at, they've been lying to you. They don't give you any nutrition. They don't give you anything that's necessary for disease preventative, because it doesn't have the dollar sign at the end of it. So, unfortunately,
nothing natural.
You spend all that time and all that money, and guess what? You know, and I even know somebody that went to medical school, and they said half of what we're teaching you is bullcrap. The trouble is we just don't know what half. I mean, I never heard anything so ridiculous in my life, but that's what they tell them. So we have to teach. You have to learn all this, and half of it's baloney. I wouldn't pay for a course that they tell me I'm going to teach you half baloney and half good. I mean, does that make sense? You imagine doing the Bible like that. Half of what we're going to tell you is right, and the other half is no good, and you'll figure it out.
Any time I do studies, I often will go to Google and Google things and try to get some knowledge from there. Sometimes you can find some good sources, but most of the time you can't. You'll find answers, but no source to the answer. You know, it's just that their opinion, their thought, and this is what it is, and that's that. You know, there is nothing there. That's not where you want to study and learn. You don't want to take those things in and put it into your brain as truth until you can prove. You know, again, you know, one of my teachers, you know, always taught, look at, you have to prove everything. You have to look it up yourself. Don't trust me and don't trust anyone else. Yeah, you can take this opinion, a thought, an idea, and conclusion, but you got to follow through. Follow, you know, how the person got to that. Or go look at to see how they got to that. If they're not giving you all the sources on how they got to that, then you can't trust it. You have to go reprove it yourself. You got to find the proof. But most of the places you go, you look things up, and they give you opinions and thoughts as if this is a conclusion and this is how it works, and people believe it. So we're filled with nothing but garbage, fake stuff.
I think it's gotten worse, John. I think Google used to be pretty good, and I think now everything
it is
skewed.
Yeah, it is.
You know, well, look, the internet started out for research. And when you got research papers off the internet, that's what they were working on. You could pretty much rely on it. You know, they gave you their sources.
When you look for documents, then you can have the document. You got the proof there when you're looking for documents. Also, when I'm looking for something and trying to find something, you know, when you come up on the first page, you look down it and you find nothing but garbage. You know, I skim down and go to page 72 or something, you know, maybe 1,000 pages or something, pop to towards the end because maybe that's where you'll find it. But anyway, people should not be filling their minds up with things that are important that other people tell them unless it's proved to them. You have to believe, you have to prove it to yourself. And know that it's true, and then build upon the truth. Because once you build upon a lie, that's a false foundation. Everything above that, it's like the fruit of the poisonous tree in law. You know, everything above it collapses. It's worthless. It means nothing. So anyway, we got callers in the box, and I've already unmuted Andre. Andre's back. Two two nine.
He might have a problem because we went through this before with him.
All right, go to Fred, I guess.
All right, let's try it. Fred, you're on.
Hello, guys.
Welcome, Fred. Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can.
I've got a couple questions for maybe Brent or John. And it's got to do with this Admiralty Court stuff. To begin with, government is created to preserve and protect our rights. Now, there's a difference between our Constitution rights, which is a covenant, and the contract of admiralty is...
I think we're better to use unalienable rights.
Well, whatever. It's a covenant with God. And it supersedes anything man can write, is my point. And our 10th Amendment restricts government from grabbing power that we didn't give it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got our Article 3 courts. Now, the Admiralty courts become inland piracy because they're circumventing the law of the land on the continental shelf, which makes...
Correct.
The jurisdiction should either be the United States Navy through the Marine Corps, which does not use posse comitatus because they operate separate from the Army.
And maritime law, commercial business.
Well, that's what they do. The Marines work with the Navy to take out pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Coast Guard does.
Right.
So when did I become a pirate, Fred?
Well, every time you go into one of these Nisi Prius courts that have no power to find or collect, you're being robbed.
Yeah, anytime they place something, some kind of a hold on you in REM, you've been called a pirate.
You're in a stupid military martial law admiralty court, and I think the Marines should take you out of there. Anyway, I thought I would throw that in as a possible remedy. I yield.
Okay, well, I'm going to go to the next one. Let's see here, next question.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah.
Good, how are you? This is Drew. I'm calling. I talked to Jan the other day, told him I'd be calling tonight. My wife left after 18 years and took the granddaughter. It's not really her granddaughter. She's a step-grandmother. You know, children knew Ted placed the granddaughter with us when she was born, or she was going to go for adoption. So we took her. We didn't adopt her. We didn't do foster care. We just custody, you know.
Yeah.
18 years or 13 years, she's doing really good. She's a really good kid, doing good in school, all this stuff. And, you know, I thought she took off with another guy or something here. And I think my ex from when I was 16 years old got to her, and that's the child's actual grandmother who had visitations that we fought, you know, custody, and we got custody, but she got visitations. And, you know, she couldn't get to my wife to get her away from me, so she's using the kid to influence my wife to leave, and they did. They got a place 2 weeks ago and left. And So now every time I call, I can't talk to my wife. I can't get a hold of anybody. You know, I just went last night, took her the kids some Easter things down. That was like prying teeth to try to find out. She was at the grandmother's house. Anyway, my wife went and filed in the courts a special relief, you know, petition for special relief in front of a judge in Luzerne County Court. And I was checking everywhere, seeing what was filed where, calling every day. And I found on the 9th that she filed something with the pathonitary, so I went over there, got a copy. And I filed back for a special relief petition, same judge. Went in there, and as I went in there, she says, oh, yeah, well, they were here. I was talking to them and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I want custody of my granddaughter back. She says, no, she says she has, she says, you know, your wife has full custody until the hearing May 14th. So we'll just put your hearing for May 14th. They says, no, I want custody back. And she says, no, well, we're not going to do that now. Okay. So, you know, I feel like my rights are being violated here. So now my ex, not my wife, but my ex, who's kind of manipulating my wife and the child now, they took her out of her school. They I called around to see if she was in the school where my wife is in the Plains area, Wilkes-Barre, and she wasn't. She wasn't at her school for a week. And then last night I took Easter things down for her, and
well,
I got to
her. Wilkes-Barre, that court system is way out of whack, isn't it? Because they've been infiltrated by what is it that the religion
the charter thing? The are you talking about the they have that charter, whatever the county is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, I've heard about, you know, I know Wilkes-Barre. You know, my parents live not far from Wilkes-Barre. They moved out to Pennsylvania some years back. Wait, and
I was born and raised in Wilkes-Barre, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in and out.
Wilkes-Barre really changed because they have a lot of immigrants and a lot of illegal aliens over there, but immigrants and with a different religion, you know, that's not Christian based.
There's
influences in the courts by that and everything.
Yeah, there's some Muslims there and stuff like that, but there's a lot more in Hazleton. But the thing is, I grew up there.
Yeah,
you're
right. Hazleton's really bad. Let me ask you a couple of questions on your case, though. Now, this is your granddaughter you're talking about, right?
This is my granddaughter. Listen, I've been dealing with this since I was 16 years old. This woman that I'm talking about, my ex, she, when I was 16 years old, I was with her for a year. We had a child. She then took off with the child. Now, this gets really interesting, okay? She then took off with the child after I visited her a couple weekends. We split up. She took off with the child. I didn't know where she was. I called around. I could not find her by
name.
Now,
this was your child now, right?
This was my child, okay? Now, I was paying child support because I was 16 years old. I had the records, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I pulled the records from the archives. Now, what happened is she took off. I couldn't find my daughter for 13 years. I called schools and everything. Could never find her. I didn't know where the mother was, okay? When she's 13, we were both trying to get a hold of each other, and we happened to just get back in touch, okay? Are you there?
Okay, now, yeah, but this is your daughter or your granddaughter?
No, this is my daughter, and this is how the relationship started when I was 16.
Okay,
I'm 51.
So your daughter had a child, and then now you have a granddaughter.
Yes, and now I have a granddaughter, and my daughter I didn't see for 13 years. She had some... issues, you know, with her mother raising her, and children and youth didn't want to put her with her.
Let me just ask a few questions so I can give you a little bit of an understanding on what you're up against. But
yeah.
I have a little bit of knowledge here, not much, and maybe Brent's listening, and maybe he can pipe in after me.
Okay.
But, so you have a daughter. You paid the support all that time. I suppose you visited her or she visited you from time to time or whatever that relationship was.
No.
Eventually, she grows up and then she has a daughter.
No, but I didn't get to see her. I never got to see her for 13 years. Every time I went to court, I said, I want to see my daughter.
Nevertheless, you paid support. You're the biological father, okay?
Yes, I paid support.
You're the biological father of that child. Now, that child grows up. She has a child. That child now is 13. Where is her mother now? Where is your daughter now?
Her mother is back and forth from her mother's house to her boyfriend's house to the other boyfriend's house to the mother's house. She's not stable with anything.
What relationship does she have with her child?
What's that?
What relationship does she have with her child?
Well, when children used to play the baby with us, they said, do you want to have foster care and get paid for this? Do you want to do adoption? or do you want to do custody? I said, listen, she's my biological granddaughter. I said, if my wife and I assume responsibility to take care of her, we will at our expense. He says, okay. He said, but once we close this case, you're going to have a battle with her over custody. And I said, I understand that. I said, we'll take that as it comes. So we did that.
And
we went through the full evaluations, all this stuff and whatever. And what she did was she got visitation. The grandmother got visitation every other weekend. But she put my daughter down on paper as a defendant with me and my wife. And then she had my daughter at her side backing her up saying, well, this is my mother and I want my daughter at her house.
Here's what you're up against. Here's the problem. I've had a little bit of a problem with, the courts out there in Pennsylvania. My sister had a situation out there. So I've seen when I tried to get custody of her kids, and I'm blood, it was a problem. They come into the court system, first of all, they always love to lay towards the women because they can make money off the woman,
because the man's working. I've been through this since I was 16, okay? Now, here's the thing. My ex, when I was 16, took off with the daughter for 13 years. You got to hear this out, okay? Hear this out because this gets really good. She took off. I'm going to go as quick as I can. She took off with her for 13 years. She gets back into my life when she's about 13 years old, okay? She has a different name. She has a different name. She has, instead of the M name, she has a W name, okay? My name's a K, all right? Now, I wonder why this is. I ask her mother. Her mother says, oh, well, this was because when, I got remarried and had two boys, and when she started school, I wanted her to be like the family, so I had a name change. So I believed this for a few years, okay? Now, it turns out that I checked into it, and I dug into it a little. I see that right before my daughter started school age, her name was changed, and there's sealed records in the county, sealed records in her name, okay? Then later on, I had an attorney find that out anyway, but then later on, her mother wouldn't give her her birth certificate to get a driver's license. She can't drive anyway, but I took her down to the Department of Vital Statistics, and I got her birth certificate. When she got it, and the lady handed it to her, she said, oh my God, Michael's my father. That's the other guy, okay? That's her husband. Now, it was on there, and the lady said, yeah, that's on there because of the adoption, okay? I never knew nothing about this adoption. So I said, you know what? Give me two copies of that. So she got a copy. I got a copy. Now, I've been holding on to this for a while, and I did a little research, and I don't know if I'm right or not, but I went down about a year ago to the domestics, and I said, I want to pull these two cases for support. So the lady archived them, got me out of the archive, and she pulled me two cases. One in my ex's maiden name, one in my ex's married name. Now she says I only paid support for like 2 or 3 years. Well, 2 or 3 years in her maiden name, then she switched it to the illegal adoption name. And I was paying, and they were trying to put me in jail all the time for support, and I wasn't seeing my daughter, okay? Now, here's the thing. I know who did it because I looked up the attorney back from 1984, who was the adoption attorney, and he is now the court administrator in Luzerne County. He knows that I know. Okay? Now, I sat on it a while. My ex thinks because of statute of limitations, I can't go after her for this, and I said, you know what? You're right. But he's a court officer, and there is no statute of limitations on him. Is that correct?
Well, really, that's right. I don't know about the statutes and things on that, but in natural law, under common law, there is no statute of limitations because there is no statutes. If the case has enough merit in it through memory of the witnesses, no matter how old it is, if there's enough merit there and evidence there to get a case concluded, then it can be concluded. And if the evidence is too old and the memories are too far, then it's not going to get concluded.
Well, here's the thing.
How old is your granddaughter? You never said.
My granddaughter is 13 now, and here's the thing. When we first got custody, when we were going through this custody suit, I told my wife, I said, listen, she's a federal postal worker. She works. She can't have her there because she doesn't have a babysitter. I said, but when this kid turns about 13 years old, they claim they have the right to say what they want to do at that point, right? Okay.
Well,
I told my wife, I said, she's going to try to get her. And sure enough, she's 13 years old now, and she's trying to get her. And here's the thing. She didn't like it at all. She's been trying to get me and my wife apart for quite a while. However, she's very manipulative. She's been trying to do this, okay? She's a hardcore liberal. I'm sorry, but this is what she is. I understand why we didn't get along when we were 16. I didn't know that then, but at any rate, she is... She now pulled my wife out of the house because she couldn't get her out by telling her, "Ah, what are you doing there? You're a nice girl. I'm here for you. Why didn't you leave him?" She couldn't do it. So now she's been manipulating the granddaughter on the weekends to come home and tell my wife to let's leave on him. They left. They left me. And now she's there not letting her talk to me. I called. I texted her today. She texts me back. And, you know, it's been like this. The first day she left, I called my wife, and I said, "What's going on?" And then she gets on the phone and said, "Oh, well, this and this and this and this." I said, "Wait a minute." She says, "Yeah, I'm here." I said, "You're there." I said, "Okay, listen. Listen, I've been nice long enough holding back on this stuff, and I knew you were going to pull something one day or another. So now we're going to court over this thing, okay?" So I went down, like I said, my wife filed a special petition, whatever. I filed a petition for relief after that. Judge didn't do anything. On my way to the photonitary to file that, I stopped at domestics. I said, can I pull these records from the archives? I said, "I remember you. You were here like a year ago," she said. And she said, "You pulled them records, those cases," and I got them for you. I said, "Yeah, you did." I said, "Can you do that again?" She said, "Well, we didn't even get it." I said, "Well, my wife left and she took records now," right? She says, "Okay, I'll do that." And she looked on the computer. She says, "I can't find them." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Leave your number, and I'll call you later and tell you." So she called me later. She said, "Listen, there's no trace. I can't find them." I said, "What?" So what I think is, when I told my ex that Sunday night that I was going to come after her for that, and I said, "Listen, he's a court administrator. He's an attorney." I said, "He is not going to risk his career for you. He's going to implicate you in this, okay? If I go after him, not you, he's going to implicate you in this." I said, "This is going to come to justice in the end here, right?" I think she told him, and I think he had the power to disappear those records, okay?
Well, now let me ask you a question. You said you're going to be going to court later on this month?
We're going to court May 14th. We're going to court May 14th.
Okay. And are you going in with a lawyer?
Probably not, because every time I go in with a lawyer, I get screwed. Last time I went to jail.
Yeah, you get screwed both ways, unfortunately.
And I don't really like to go in with a lawyer. I like to go in and say what I think.
Have you filed any papers?
The only thing I filed, this is what I'm going to file now, okay, since she abandoned me.
Let me suggest to you what you need to file, okay?
Okay.
The most important thing in this case is your affidavit. And you have to sit down and really give a good thought about this affidavit. You have to write it in such a way that you're not showing any vindictiveness yourself, okay? That you don't just overload the paper with negative things concerning, you know, your
wife. I want the facts and I want the issue. Right.
That's the point. And you be careful you don't get lost in stories inside this thing. Get to the facts.
Right.
Once you write it and you put it aside and come back another day and read it, and just keep reading it every single day, you'll find that you'll be manipulating it every day, fine-tuning it every day. You want to get a good affidavit into that court. And
so
then you got to make it clear. You got to make it clear. Hold on, listen. This is important. You want to make it clear what your position is. You know, if you know how to write a paper, a very simple paper with the court heading on top and, you know, this one against
that
one.
Yeah, I know how to do that.
You tell on a piece of paper, very simple, you tell the court what your position is, you refer to your affidavit, and you give them the wherefore and what you're looking for this court to do for you and what needs to happen. You go
and
into
I want
that
her
court,
to produce an affidavit, right?
But no, don't push that. Leave that alone for right now. You get that into the court before the court case so that the judge has time to read it. And the first thing you want to do when you get into the court, you say, "Your Honor, have you had time to read my papers?" And more than likely, the person, they're going to say, "No, I haven't," because they don't usually read the papers per se. I mean, a good judge would, but they never seem to read the papers, unfortunately. Especially
when do
in
I
paper.
Have to have them in by?
Huh?
When do I have to have them in by?
Well, the sooner the better because, at least a week before your court date at bare minimum. But your point is this. Here's what I'm trying to get to you. You need to discover what the position of the court is and the attitude of the court. Okay, so by writing a good paper, putting the facts onto the paper and making clear your case and so on, and handing the paper in. The first question, let's get back to you going into the court. The first question, "Your Honor, have you had time to read my papers yet?"
Right.
"Well, no, I haven't had time yet, but let's go on. Let's see what we're going to go through." "Well, Your Honor, can we please take some time so you can read my paper?" You know, the thing is if they keep brushing away from that, you want a solution today, and you need to tell them that at that point in the court. Look, we need to get a solution here. I am the natural grandparent to this child, okay?
Right.
That person is not. Let's just start off with that, okay, and see where it goes, because, you see, ultimately, if the parents are involved, and even if the parents aren't involved, they don't care about blood. They care about money and keeping this case in the court until that child becomes 18 or whatever. And they'd love to even take it beyond that. There's money in it. If they go to school, they'll take it to their 21. And if they get any way, they'll take it more. So the point is you got to feel out the court where it's going. You got to understand where the court is and where the position of the court is. And they'll love to leave it on the other side because that they can drag on for a long time. So once you understand the position of the court, who knows, you may be lucky and get the court on your side, and they make a decision and move it to the other direction. Who knows? And then you can pursue, well, you can't pursue her for any kind of coverage of what do they call it, child support or anything. But the thing is your first time, before you could do anything or say anything or do anything, you need to understand the court you're in, what their position is and what they're thinking. Now, I will tell you this, and this I know, and this is true in New York and in Pennsylvania, and it's unfortunate. Right. Well, it is fortunate to some degree. A grandparent really doesn't have any right to the grandchildren. Now, that should disappear if the parent, you know, your child, is not available, incompetent, abusive, or passed away or whatever. Well, of course, you're the bloodline. You should be able to get your child. I know in Pennsylvania, this is what happened with my sister. And my sister was no longer available, gone. And there's the children. I'm blood, okay?
Right.
And yet they prefer keeping it in their court case, in their jurisdiction, in Pennsylvania, and continue to collect the monies or whatever the process is that they're doing by keeping this into the court. Okay?
Could I tell you something else here?
Yeah.
Are you there? Can I tell you something else here? All right. Here's the thing. My daughter was in a lot of psychological hospitals when her mother took her for 13 years, okay? She had her in and out. So she's pretty incapacitated to the point where she can't, she can't really take care of the child. Everybody knows that, okay? But she will be in court on her mother's side. And I'm going to ask them, if she's a defendant, why was she on that side, okay? Because I don't understand, you know, that she's playing my daughter to benefit herself. And I think what's happening here with my ex-wife,
she's getting your daughter to stick on her side.
Yes, yes, she's manipulating
her. That's a
problem.
Listen,
my daughter called me the other day. She's, what's going on? What's going on? I said, you know what's going on. Leanne left me and they filed this and that, whatever. She got Avery. She said, well, let's go. Why are you taking me to court? I said, shit, I'm not taking you to court. I said, go read the document. It says your mother's the plaintiff against me and my wife and you. You're a defendant in this. You should be on my side, but you'll be in court with your mother, I said. Oh, I don't know what's going on. I've said, I'm just telling you what's going on, right?
Well, look, that does create another problem. But I'll tell you right now, you can't even figure out what to do until you understand what the position of the court is and how they respond to your paperwork and respond to what's true. And I would remind the court that, by the way, you know, an affidavit rules this court, and everything I've got in this paper right here is absolute 100% truth, and there's nothing on the other side because there probably is no affidavit on the other side.
Well,
and
let me tell you what's going on. It gets worse than this, and I'm in a real position here, and I want to file something federal. Listen, my rights have been violated since I was 16 years old with my kids. I have two daughters. I don't see them. I have other grandkids I don't see. I've been through this court system. I've been through domestics. I've been through child support all this while. And, you know, it's been ridiculous, okay? I've always been the last – my younger daughter, okay? The first daughter was gone for 13 years. I was paying support on a legal case that I didn't even know. The second daughter, I was with her for 7 years. She was great. I had her in a private school. Everything was good. She's a brilliant kid. She was managing Kmart at 18 years old. She's a good kid. Anyway, I had custody of her. I won a custody case. I had custody of her. And her mother took off with her, set herself up in an apartment. I didn't know where they were. I had no place to file. They said, you have to have an address to file. I had no place to file. She hung on to her until she went and changed around, went to welfare, went to domestics, got support on me, you know, turned it all around, you know. And I don't see my daughter no more.
All right,
now, the thing,
look, at, Look at now, what you need to do, though, but you can't have a strategy until you know the position of the court. Then at that point, once you understand that they're going to ignore your affidavit, they're going to ignore you as a potential, grandparent for the child and a legal guardian. If that's what they're going to do, at least now you know the position of the court. Now you got to figure a plan how you're going to deal with that. So why don't we take it that way and see how the court – work on that, because nobody knows the answer at this point. There is no answer because we don't know the attitude of the court.
Right. Well, here's the other thing.
When you first time in, look at it. If you go in there, and number one, I have no time to read it yet. Now you know something. Well, number two, well, once you take the time, we'll wait here once you go read it. No, come on, let's move on. And so that's one problem. Now, right there, you know a problem. Well, then you refer back to the fact that you have an affidavit in the court, which rules the court, okay? Your affidavit rules that court unless it's rebutted, okay? So if it's an unrebutted affidavit at this point, you move the court for temporary custody now. Look at
let me ask you, isn't that special relief thing she filed like an affidavit because she filled that out and stuff?
An affidavit is her story, unadulterated, unfiltered, with her sworn statement with a witness, which is a notary, period. That's an affidavit. If there's just the fact that she signed it and someone signed it as a witness is meaningless. It's got to be a notary, a judge, a magistrate, someone of authority, okay, to make it an affidavit. That's number one.
I want to tell you this, too, okay?
Listen, the lawyer writes and swears to it. That also is not an affidavit of hers. Plus, their affidavit has to rebut your affidavit. So I would try to do it as early as possible. I wouldn't wait for a week. If you can get it in a court in a week or two at the most, okay?
So how can I get it by the first? I'll get in 2 weeks.
Make sure the other side gets a copy and that it's delivered to them with an affidavit of service. Make sure someone else puts it in the mail to get it to them or serves it to them. Okay, get it to her or the lawyer. It doesn't matter. But you get it to them, and when you go into the court, you can produce that evidence. By the way, Your Honor, you know, as you know, the law says that an affidavit rules the court, and they have not rebutted my affidavit. I've got proof of serving right here, and I move this court right this moment to move my child, my grandchild, back into my home with me, at least on a temporary basis as we go through this process. Now, if the court denies all this, and in the affidavit, and you make the fact that she's not even blood, okay, and you make all this fact, that if the court rules continues to go the other direction, at least you know what you're up against. And it's probably going to go the other direction.
Well, they keep saying that the blood doesn't matter, that the blood doesn't matter, okay? But here's the thing also, okay? That judge ordered my granddaughter to be with my wife. It's full custody she gave her until the hearing, okay? Now, I just went last night to get...
That's to the hearing. You've been in court already with this once?
No, I just went to try to do a special relief after she did hers like 2 days later, and she didn't budge on it. She just said, we're going
to
go...
Listen to me. This will be your first time before the judge, right?
Me? This judge, I've been through judges many times. They don't like me.
About talking about this case, this judge, this is the first time. So you're going in, and if you follow the thoughts and ideas that I've given you, you know, to talk with the judge the way I mentioned it, to make the point, get up the affidavit, no side on the affidavit, and I'm moving the court right now. My affidavit is unrebutted. They've had opportunity. Well, I sent it to them. They've had it for 2 weeks now, and here is my proof of service, and they have not responded, and you're going to make a decision. Well, you need to make a decision on my affidavit because my affidavit rules this court, and I'm moving this court for at least minimum temporary custody at this point in time. See where they go.
If they don't move in my favor, if they don't go in my favor, then what do I do then?
Forget about it. Well, you don't know what they're going to do until after. Okay?
Right.
Once they do that, you make the point that on the record, on and for the record, I am now requesting, the minutes of this court. Okay? At the end of the day, that's what you want. Okay? And you go and sit down and wait for them. The stenographer will be there. I'll wait for it, whatever. But, you know, ask for the audio recording, and you'll wait for that. Okay, get the audio recording and get the copy off the stenographer.
You know,
and make all the papers filed in this case. Now you've got everything you need as ammunition to potentially do something else. But you don't know what you're going to do. We can just talk and talk and talk until you know the position of the court, until you face the court with the facts, and you see the way that this judge goes.
So I asked, I asked him for the record, Your Honor, for the record. I want minutes, time?
Huh?
I want it on the record. You said, what do I ask for?
For the record, I would like to have a copy of the audio of this court right now. Okay, you want to put that on and for the record, because if you ask off the record, you ask someone else,
right,
to say it doesn't exist.
For the record. Yeah, on for the record. Yeah.
Listen. This is very important. What I'm telling you at this moment, they will tell you all day long that there is no recording. Okay, but when you put it on and for the record and request it on, it's now become part of the audio record. It's become part of the stenographer. They can erase the stenographer, but they'll have to delete the tape. There's a tape.
Right.
Okay, there is a tape, and you put
that
on and put it.
I already called there when I did that petition, and I asked for the stenographer for that. I told them I wanted records for that. They said, we don't have no transcripts for that. I said, what do you mean? They said, that wasn't actually a hearing. I said, what do you mean? It was in front of a judge. They said, no, we didn't have no records for that.
Well, one of the first things that you want to know, that everything that's being spoken about is on the record. That's one of the first things in the court. Let me tell you what I do, okay? I always bring my own recorder. Now, you have to camouflage that recorder because they don't like it in the courtroom. And
I wouldn't use it because it's illegal in Pennsylvania.
Huh?
It's illegal in Pennsylvania. I actually think my wife was recording me. I don't know if you could do that.
Look, it's not unlawful to tape record anything. You know, it'd be nice to be able to tell them that. I know when I was – well, it's nice to be able to tell them that, but you can't, because they're going to say you can't do it. No, I do it anyway. I don't – look, I'm not going to use that in the court. They'll never know I recorded. But if I ever had to use it, I got it. If they said nay, 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 and say, whoa, what are you talking? Well, there's no record. Well, here it is. Play the audio. But you don't need it for that purpose. The purpose you want yours for is that you do have that voice. You do have that record if you do have to need it down the line, number one. And the other, but the most important thing is to be able to write an accurate affidavit. You can then respond to the court. Listen. If they're saying there's no record, and you've got a record that you've recorded, and then you write an affidavit concerning details of everything that took place in that courtroom, for the conversation, he said, she said, they said, we said, they said, he said, she said, whatever, all the way through. Number one, they're going to know you recorded, number one. They know you got something on them, number one. Then you take that paper, and you do it in an affidavit form, and you file it in the court, and you say, on and for the record, this is what I understood the last meeting was, and you got all those details, okay? But look,
so the record, you're saying. I make an affidavit out of the record.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So the position and the attitude and everything taking place in the court is recorded, because if they're not recording it, you need to record it. And
what if I have somebody else? What if I have somebody else?
Listen, when you file that in the court case, okay, and you file on the other side, if they don't rebut it, then all of that is factual. That is the record.
Yeah.
Okay? So you've got to make a record. And again, your first order of business is try to figure out if this court's going to comply with the law, if they're going to do the right thing, if they're going to rule to your favor. Or if they're just going to ignore you and they're all about money and they don't care about nothing else. You need to understand this. And you need to understand if you have any leverage to make the change that position that they have in that court.
I've been screwed by this Luzerne County Court all my life, okay? I'm telling you, all right? I've had a judge lock me up for contempt. I had another one with my granddaughter. I went to a case in front of the judge. She got so mad at me because I pulled federal law over her, and I said, you don't trump that. And she got so mad, and she canceled the hearing, and she continued. It was so funny. And then the lawyers out in the hall yelling, he's crazy, he's nuts. And I said, did everybody in this hall just hear her slander me, I said, because that could be a lawsuit against her now. She's out here saying that about me. Right? They didn't like it at all. They didn't like it.
Look, we're way beyond our time here, so we've got to move on. If you want to come back next week, we could pick this up again.
I will be back each week. I will be back on here each week, because I usually listen every week anyway, okay? But she has filed
thing.
My ex has filed the SPCA against me, where they came up and she said, I abandoned the dogs and animals were abandoned. I didn't ask for these dogs. My wife wanted the cats and the dogs and the animals. I paid to feed them. The SPCA came up here And she told me on the phone, I have reason to believe your animals are taken care of. They came up here and they said everything is fine. Okay, they have their shots, they have their tags, you have medication for them here, everything's good. So that didn't work with her, so she got mad at me because I took Easter against down the kid yesterday. Now she filed the SPCA again today, and now they filed a PFA today on me.
Look, all of these details are not going to be beneficial to your case at this point in time, and I wouldn't even bring that up in any way.
Destroy me.
Huh?
I'm a state constable, and they're trying to destroy me. I tell everybody,
yeah,
I'm not a...
But what I'm trying to help you with is this one case. You've got to stay focused on it. You've got to stay on point and on the facts and not get lost. You know, I try to tell people write affidavits. We've kind of wrote a little paper on how to write an affidavit.
I'm telling you.
The story the way it is, but hold it. Everybody plays lawyer inside their affidavits. They go on in long-windedness. Nobody wants to read that stuff, and the judge certainly isn't going
to
read it. But you got to write an interesting factual affidavit. But look, you have no clue on what you can do until you understand the position of the court. And you're going to know that on May, whatever date that is, in May. You're going to know it, 14th, I think you said. You know, you're going to know it on that day. But you have to be prepared for that day, and you need to get your papers out and delivered at least 2 weeks before time. 30 days is much more, but you ain't got 30 days. But just write this paper, get it filed in the court, get it filed, and make your motion paper in there, and, you know, and you're going to move the court to take custody.
You don't think I should get an attorney for that then or anything, right? Because, I mean, she don't have one, but I'm assuming at that point she will.
I can't advise you one way or another because, you know, look at most attorneys.
And I don't like to use an attorney because I really don't. I mean, what happens is you can't talk. You don't know what's going on. I don't like to do that because they stretch it out and they play games.
Most of them are worthless. You're just paying a lot of money for nothing. I mean, look at, but, you know, I can't tell you not to get an attorney. And if you don't know, you need to understand the court and how things work, of course. But, you know, that's the decision you got to make. You know, sometimes How about hiring a lawyer to advise you on this, look at your paperwork and assist you with the paperwork, let them know, look, I'm writing the papers, I want assistance of counsel. I'm hiring you not to write my papers, but to give me assistance to counsel. So what do you think of the papers, any thoughts or ideas, any other positions, any legal maneuvers we could make? But you do it.
Right.
But have your counsel there for assistance. And I'd even bring them to court, and when your judge talks to the lawyer, say, excuse me, judge, he's not here as my lawyer. He's my assistant of counsel. As the Constitution applies to me, I'm speaking for myself. So what did you want to do, judge? Okay?
Yeah,
so that would be a way to go.
But what do I do in this situation if they're trying to ruin me with this animal thing and with this PFA, so when they go to they have more firepower?
Why don't we do this? Between now and next week, you work on your papers. Hopefully you get it out by the end of the week and the next week. When you come back next week, you know, we can talk some more. But we've got one other caller in the queue. It's almost...
Can I file false claim charges on them? Could I file some kind of false claim charges? Cease and desist? Could I file a cease and desist on them or a false claim charges?
Well, no, because you have to be able to get a hearing for that sole purpose to make that decision. And that would have to... And again, you'd have to, if you moved it into federal court, you have to have a good reason to be able to move it into federal court. You have to have a constitutional reason. So whatever happens when you go to court will tell you whether you have a constitutional ability or not. You know?
Yeah, they're repeat offenders at the county, and they violated my rights for my whole life, and I think somebody's going to pay for this, and this guy too. I got four people in this county implicated in this if I file something on him.
All right, well, look, why don't we talk next week because we got to go.
All right, I'll see you Monday. Thank you. I appreciate your good advice.
Thank you. All righty.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, it's kind of late, but I got Andre in the queue. If you got something short, we'll take it. Andre?
Yes, hi. I don't know what's been going on because I was sitting here like, I'm here. You guys couldn't hear me. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah, we didn't hear you before, but we got you now.
Yeah, I wasn't unmuted. So, listen, is there a way that I can just talk to you guys tomorrow or something?
Well, we'll be back next Monday, and if you want, I'll let, you know, we'll keep an eye out for you, and we'll pull you up first in the queue if you want.
I need something before next Monday, honestly.
Oh, well, what's the issue? Just give me an idea of the issue, you know, 30 seconds or less. It's just a simple idea.
it's so complicated. I don't know how to explain all this stuff. Number one, it has to deal with
Well, what kind of court case?
Tax court. Is more.
Tax court.
Yes.
All right, I'll tell you what. Give a call to Jan and see if he can't get me. If he can't get me at the time, try again. But he usually can get me. And tomorrow you could try during the afternoon or the next day or whatever. And maybe we can give you some thoughts and advice on it. But, you know, tax court, you're an IRS tax court? Okay, all right. I don't want to get into any details because we can get lost in that. So, okay, just try to get a hold of me this week. Get a hold of Jan, and he'll try to conference me in.
Okay. Is it Jan?
Jan, J-A-N. You'll find him under the directory. He's the national leader.
Okay.
Okay?
Is there a number I need to dial or just look for it?
Yeah, there's a phone number under the directory. You go to nationallibertyalliance.org, go to the directory, click on directory, and you'll find them towards the top of the page, Jan, and his phone number will be there. Okay?
Okay. And give me your name again, please.
John Duresh.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. And what's your name?
Andra.
Andra. Okay. Is that A-N-D-R-E? That's the proper spelling? Andra?
No, but close enough. You're good.
Okay. Well, that's what I see on the board. It says Andre. Andra.
Yeah,
hey, well, whatever. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but okay, Andra. All right. Thanks for calling. We'll talk to you. All right?
All right.
All right. Have a good day. All right. We're going to close down now. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and I'm sure we'll have another topic. I'm not sure what it'll be yet, but we'll have another topic, and see you then. Thanks. Good night.